morning from those, all that whole first, whatever, all the power months, so I did not ask at all.
Are you serious? Are you serious?
And I started thinking my office, I think, oh, they're just not talking to the lady, and they are sure because they can't hear anything. It sounded like the special cleanup charge was in the parents' office.
And sometimes I'll have my email up, and Nancy and Carol link to it, and if they can't, and somebody's talking, so she can email and say, this is provided with such and such, might be able to check.
Or
drink
from
the code,
good morning. I'll now call to order the Wednesday, January 25th. Meeting of the Milwaukee County Committee on Health and Human Needs. Madam Clerk, please call the roll to establish a quorum.
Supervisors Biddle.
Excused.
Mayo.
Right.
Rice.
Here.
Jersey.
Here.
Lipscomb.
Here.
Harris.
Here.
Madam Chair.
Present.
We have a quorum.
Thank you. Item number one.
From the Director Department of Family Care, requesting authorization to execute a contract with the State of Wisconsin Department of Health Services to operate a managed care organization to provide the family care benefit in a geographic area that includes Kenosha County and Racine County for the period commencing in 2012, immediately upon certification by DHS and continuing through December 31st, 2012, and to accept the funding thereunder.
Good morning, Ms. Ledger. Mr. Hodgson, mm-hmm. How are you guys this morning? Good
morning, Madam Chair, County Board of Supervisors. We are well.
Good for it.
Apologies to Ms. Mack for putting such a long resolution in there.
All right.
What you have before you, as we brought to the board earlier, was the board authorization to enter into two initial discussions with the State Department of Health Services about Milwaukee County Department of Family Care offering the family care benefit in Racine and Kenosha. That initial approval was as a result of the state telling us that they wanted to enter into discussions about certification dependent upon receipt of additional approvals from both Racine and Kenosha County. Milwaukee County disputed to the state the necessity of having Racine and Kenosha basically state that this county can't provide family care. Clearly, Milwaukee County can't provide the family care benefit. We were allowed to submit a proposal. But in the interest of time and positioning ourselves to be able to do this, while we continue to dispute the necessity of these MOUs, we were able to craft them in such a fashion they most closely resemble the MOU that the department currently has with other entities in Milwaukee County. Racine and Kenosha have both signed those memorandum of understanding. So the next step for us is to have two discussions with the state at this point. One is to certify us to be able to provide that benefit the way that we are certified to provide the benefit in Milwaukee County, and then concurrently to begin discussions about what that capitation rate will be for services. So what we want to ask for now is board authorization to go ahead and move on to that next step in this process.
Okay. Supervisor Mayo? I have a motion for approval. Supervisor Roscoe?
So last time we discussed it, I don't know that we, there were still some issues of sort of what is our business plan and our measures of success down there. I mean, I think it's clear that one of the reasons that we're looking at this is the fact that at least we were frozen and that this is seen as one of the ways we continue to grow. Mm-hmm. Have we developed a business plan that we know, I'm assuming that we do, in terms of sort of the break even or what is the point at which if they don't give us the capitation rate that we're projecting in our plan, that we would not go ahead with it, that we would return to us and say, We determined that based on the deal they're offering, it's not a good business decision for us to expand with this territory. I want to know what's in place to protect us, because I do think there's a lot of risk here, and it goes beyond, I think, the level of analysis that we're going to do. Bring in a couple things that we're looking for.
Absolutely. Thank you, Supervisor Lipscomb. In terms of what we would anticipate or require from a capitation rate from the state, I'll defer to Mr. Hudson, our Chief Financial Officer.
Madam Chair, County Board Supervisors, Board Supervisor Lipscomb, basically right now what we're asking to do is proceed to that next step, to sit down with the state and try to negotiate a capitation rate so I can do that type of forecasting. Ultimately, we'll have to come back to you with a proposal on the contract, and also this is the outlook, but I can't do that until I get your authorization to take those additional steps. That's what I'm trying to do here. So to answer your question, I haven't done a forecast yet because I haven't been able to work with the state yet to work on a capitation rate, and we weren't able to do that because they wanted these approvals from the Racine and Kenosha counties. So we've gotten those approvals, so now the next steps would be to do just what you're talking about.
My fear is that we just continue to march sort of incrementally towards it, and yet I don't know at what point that objective analysis is going to be shared with us. And my fear is always that it's shared at the point at which sort of too late, that we would never pull the plug unless it was just totally upside down. So I want to make sure that at that point that we are given true analysis and real discussion of the risk that we've got up there.
Sure. Madam Chair, County Board Supervisors, you'll be given ample time to look at it. I guess the key here is, just like with the existing program, should something become catastrophic, we have a certification process that becomes annual, and should the County Board of Supervisors elect not to no longer have the program, they can do that. It's usually a 5-year contract, renewable annually, subject to certification. So you have those options with the existing program. You would have the same options with Racine Kenosha, and could pull out relatively quick. And there would be in the health and community supports contract requires a transition plan, where there would be transitioning to another MCO and things like that. Should you elect you elected officials choose not to run this program?
Thank you.
I just want to piggyback. They will have a separate reserve fund in case any deficits that they have. So Racine Kenosha reserve fund separate from Milwaukee County reserve fund. That's correct.
Madam Chair, Supervisor Mayo, will be required. How I report to the state will probably be in a consolidated format. How I report to Milwaukee County will probably be separate. But our reserves are going to be combined. We're considered one entity, just like Community Care is, who operates in multiple counties. They're one entity, so their complete reserves is for all different locations. What I would be doing is reporting back to you on the operations separately from Milwaukee County. The reserves, they will in order to fund the reserves, they will look to our existing reserves as a mechanism, and along with the capitation rate.
And Madam Chair, Supervisor Mayor, just to clarify too, when we talk about the reserves, those are dollars that have been a part of the capitation payment that the department has received from the state. Those are not county dollars. Those aren't tax levy dollars. Those are, as we receive capitation payments for each member that's enrolled in the program, we fund our 3 required reserves from those dollars. So those aren't tax levy dollars. That we have sufficient reserves to be able to deal with any sort of untoward or unforeseen occurrence that happens within the program.
So that's why the state is so perfect, because we have reserve funds present. That just follows on to the new program that you're trying to do with Racine and Kenosha.
Madam Chair, Supervisor Mayo, Milwaukee County has been in the sort of enviable position of being able to having funded its reserves, of not having to having We haven't entered into any sort of, you know, risk loss share agreement with the state, and although we received, as you all recall, backing from the county in the early days of the program has been self-sufficient on those Medicaid dollars that it receives. So that does make sense for the state that, you know, it's something that they point to and has been pointed to even in the report that came out from the Legislative Audit Bureau that the solvency and the high quality markets for this particular program. So to the extent that the state looks upon us favorably, that certainly is helpful. It also, when you talk about it, and also in reference to, I think, one of Supervisor Lipscomb's questions, if a new program were going into a new area and didn't have an existing population that they would be serving, there would be, I believe, more of a concern in terms of how many members had to come into that program in order to support their existing infrastructure. As we pointed out at the previous Health and Human Needs meeting, we are really adding, I think, a pretty small portion to our administrative structure because we have the existing staff here. So we're able to expand to another area we don't need to duplicate all of the things that we currently do. There's lots of efficiencies that are currently within our program.
What about lifting the cap? If they lift the cap, how would that affect the reserve and also assumption of your staff?
Madam Chair, Supervisor Ryan, we would be very excited and quite pleased to lift the cap. That's moving forward. It is going to take legislative action in order for that to happen. When people don't come into the program, you know, obviously we don't receive a capitation payment, but we also don't pay for services for them. So when people come in, if the cap is lifted, I mean, obviously the biggest impact is going to be on those individuals who are currently waiting for services. But as they come in, they bring with them then their capitation payments. Racine and Kenosha are different in terms of population and size. They've actually been sort of enrolling incrementally. They've had enough attrition that they really haven't waitlisted, but those are smaller areas, so they haven't really felt they haven't built a waitlist due to the enrollment caps. But once those are lifted, obviously it puts all of the programs and all of the services for individuals in a better position.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Just as a side note, it's not even if the caps would be lifted. It's when the caps are lifted, because the state of Wisconsin received notice in December, the middle of December, from the federal government letting them know that they never had the right to put a cap on the family care program. So now it's not a matter of if they lift the cap, it's a matter of when they lift the cap, and that subject will be before IGR if anybody's interested on Monday.
I know that I'm sure the office is going to change the formula somehow to, because of the increase of funding they have pay out.
It's changing the guidelines. They're trying to change the guidelines.
Madam Chair, Supervisor Mayor, if you're referring to sort of those, what the state refers to as their long-term care sustainability papers, they've put together 7 different position papers on a variety of topics within the long-term care system: residential services, administrative efficiencies, and I feel like I'm trying to name the dwarfs, IRIS and self-directed support, and identified living well at home. I got 4. But identifying within those focus areas where the state believes that they can achieve some efficiencies and cost savings. So we've taken a look at those internally. The CEO directors statewide have taken a look at those. Some of those things we've identified that we have been working on all along, but that's where the state has identified the necessary dollars in order to lift the cap on family care and IRIS.
Great. And again, that'll be in front of us here on Monday, and we'll have a report, I'm sure, next cycle. Supervisor Jurisdick.
I think the last time we asked the question about wait lists, the answer was there would be separate late wait lists. It seems now you're saying that they do not currently have a wait list, but once we get the whole program going, they'll start with wait lists. And did I misunderstand your answer there?
Madam Chair, Supervisor Jurisdick, every geographic area has they're accountable for their population. So Milwaukee County being one, you know, wherever there's a resource center. So they're responsible for their numbers of people who need services and are asking for services, and people who, for whatever reason, leave the program. So everything is handled separately. If someone leaves a program in La Crosse County, it doesn't create a vacancy in Milwaukee. So if there's a wait list in Milwaukee, it doesn't have any impact on anyone else's. From the standpoint of Racine and Kenosha, the reason they hadn't, in the light of these tests, hadn't developed a wait list is because they had enough people leaving the program and a smaller number wanting services, so they simply did not have to. They've had family care in place there for over 5 years. They're at entitlement. They don't have a wait list. They won't have a wait list once the caps are lifted. They've just sort of been proceeding with business as usual because of the difference in their demographics and the size of their population.
If they start to exceed their numbers, will they have their own wait list? I'm trying to understand your answer.
Okay.
Yes or no?
Madam Chair, Supervisor Jersey, I don't think they can. I don't think there's a number that they can exceed. If a county's at entitlement, then the door is open for people who need services to get services when they need them. They're without a cap, which is, again, as Madam Chair had pointed out, it will have to be lifted. In the absence of a cap, if a county is at entitlement, there's no ceiling that you can't go above.
Yes or no? Milwaukee County currently has a wait list.
Yes, Madam Chair and Supervisor.
If those circumstances were the same in Racine and Kenosha, and they had a wait list,
mm-hmm.
would it be separate from Milwaukee County's?
Yes.
All right. The reserves, however, and I'm glad Supervisor Mayo asked that question. As I understand it, there's only one pot of reserves. That's for everyone that's going to be administered by basically Milwaukee County staff.
Madam Chair, Supervisor Joseph Key, we would be viewed as one organization, correct? So our three reserves would be applicable both to the Milwaukee County operations and the Racine Kenosha operations. However, the capitation rate, as derived, will have built-in factors for administrative costs, and there typically is a factor in there for risk and to help fund reserves. So that hasn't been worked on yet, but your short answer to your question is yes.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought up the word risk, because I have been very nervous about this entire proposal from the beginning. But it seems that because there is only one reserve, and the fact that we're going to be adding, really what we're doing here is developing a regional model. And in my opinion, perhaps the state should be doing this, not the county, because you're answering to this board. I have a district. I represent the South Shore of Milwaukee County. When I vote, I represent the interests of those constituents. I do not represent Racine and Kenosha. I keep asking that question because I think you're increasing the risk and liability for my constituents with regard to this program. And another question I have is, have you run this past the resource board in Racine and Kenosha?
Madam Chair, Supervisor Jersey, yes, both the resource centers in Racine and Kenosha are in agreement with this. There are some long-term care districts that administer the family care benefit throughout Wisconsin. Those aren't formed by the state. Those are formed by the pilot MCOs that started. They became districts as they and were really the sole provider in a larger geographic area. So the state doesn't form those districts. The individual managed care organizations have. But the resource centers understand that they will be explaining additional options to people in Racine and Kenosha, much the same way the resource centers in Milwaukee County now explain Milwaukee County community care and eye care to individuals.
So if a decision is made on behalf of a single person in Kenosha who's not satisfied with that decision, and they can't get the resource board to represent them, am I the county supervisor that they're going to call and complain to?
Madam Chair, Supervisor Jersey, if if you're talking about an individual who's enrolled in the program who is, for whatever reason, dissatisfied with their services, they have an appeal and grievance process that they go through internally the same way that they do within every managed care organization. I would imagine that if a person who resides in Racine or Kenosha continues past that appeal and grievance process and it goes all the way up to a state fair hearing with an administrative law judge, will always do what individuals in this county do. They will call their own county board supervisor, they will call their state senator. You know, that's sort of the benefit of having, you know, a public voice at them.
You're assuming they've gotten to the level where they actually have some appeal rights. I can give you a real practical example. I get folks calling me because they can't get the department to return phone calls after they've tried a lot of times. And by calling their supervisor, and I check with the department, all of a sudden, gee, the phone calls get returned. You know, I've been very nervous about this from the get-go. I understand the model. I understand mm-hmm. the cost savings.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't understand the governance issue. I don't understand how the constituents of Racine and Kenosha are going to get proper representation in this. I really don't. And maybe this is the time for me to start voting no on this program. I'm very nervous about the model. If we're going to create regional models, it seems to me the entire region should be represented, not just coming to the county board. And correct me if I'm wrong in this in some way.
Madam Chair, Supervisor Jurisic, the other piece to remember is that there will be a board of governance upon which, you know, members sit the way that they do on the CMO governing board here. But I think sometimes another way to look at it is when any department within Milwaukee County provides a service beyond its geographic borders, whether it be IMSD, selling technology services, this is a service that we provide beyond our geographic borders. It's different because it's a long-term care service, but really it is, you know, not from a contractual standpoint, not dissimilar from the way that the medical examiner provides services beyond Milwaukee County's borders. You know, IMSD provides services beyond Milwaukee County's borders. So the Department of Family Care will provide services simply beyond our borders to people who are not the legal responsibility of the county but are still enrolled in family care.
Well, we do it through contract services, and contracts carefully defined.
Mm-hmm.
You know, usually a fee for service.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, your analogy isn't very pure there. You know, perhaps if we were doing a fee for service with Racine and Kenosha,
mm-hmm.
where we were just giving them a fee for the administration of their family care program, mm-hmm. I could understand this. But it's really more direct in terms of your management of the family care program in Racine and Kenosha. And you keep coming back to the board. I mean, if this were a simple contract with a fee for service, we would have approved the contract. That had been the end of it. But you keep coming back to us for more and more approval on this type of a program model that you're putting mm-hmm. together. And we're hearing that there's just one reserve with increased risk and liability. I start to get concerned about that, and I really question whether this regional model shouldn't be created and prepared by the state of Wisconsin. So, thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, can I speak?
You go ahead.
Madam Chair,
Chair, I'm the chair. I'm no matter.
Sorry. In regards to concerns here, first of all, I need to state this so everybody's aware. This was a social service program that is now run in a business model or an insurance model. So we are expected, we submit 3-year business plans. We have to operate like a business. Like any business, there's risk. There's for-profit entities out there that are operating this model. And in regards to the concerns regarding risk, there are 3 reserves. There's a working capital reserve, there's a restricted reserve, and there's a solvency reserve. When you deplete the first 2, the working capital and the restricted, the solvency reserve is the pooled reserve. The pooled reserve is every managed care organization has donated pledged $750,000 into a big pool. What happens is when money's run out for that MCO, that's the pool they go to use. But usually by then, that MCO will no longer exist. There will be a transition of members, and that will in the program as you know it would no longer be part of Milwaukee County should that happen. They would become part of CCI, iCare, or any other entity that wanted to get involved. Why I bring this up is because, truthfully, as policymakers, you're now being faced more with a business model and whether you want to operate a business model, because that is what is happening. And there are other entities out there that haven't been in the family care game that would like to get into the family care program, who are for-profit players, and that is what we compete with. So we're trying to further expand and diversify so we can continue to provide the family care benefit to not only the residents of Milwaukee County, but to other counties as well. The family care districts, as Director Ledger mentioned, have county board members who sit on that governing board who can speak a voice to their county, but ultimately it's run by that entity. So when there's a concern as to whether they'll be calling you or whatever, they may be calling you, but as far as jurisdiction, you wouldn't have a responsibility to that. You just wouldn't. So I'm stating this because I'm trying to prepare you, because the program continues to change, because the rules and the direction by the state are changing. We presently now not only report to the Department of Health Services, but we also report to the Office of Commissioner on Insurance. We will have a financial examination occur for 2011 and 2012 later this year. So aside from our external auditors that come in, we're going to have a whole other set of auditors coming in from the state, and they will be here a minimum of 6 weeks, they told us. And they will work off the work papers of the external auditors. So we go through a lot of examination to ensure that we're meeting their certification requirements and their standards. I'm just sharing this with you because the next step in this whole family care model, and there's talk, and it's at the federal level, will be moving to an integrated model, which is acute and primary. Hospitalizations, primary pharmacy costs, those types of things. We will be coming back to you relative to moving towards an integrated model as well. So I'm just sharing this so you're aware that this is the future of long-term care. They're gradually expanding core and trying to coordinate care. So I wanted to share that with you because those are some decisions that you'll be faced with.
All right, Supervisor West.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Hodgson did cover most of what I was going to say, but in addition to that, and I understand that Supervisor Jurcik's at a little bit of a disadvantage because she's new to the committee. But for the rest of us, we went through this when we did family care, and then when we did the expansion of family care. So they're bringing back these reports to make us aware of where we are in the process, so that we're not all of a sudden bringing the contract to the table and having supervisors say, "Well, how come we weren't, being informed all along?" The other part of that is that when we expanded to cover the disability community, we were, I think, you can correct me if I'm wrong, I think we were about two meetings away from signing the actual contract. We still had not had the capitation rate worked out with the state. We were still at the table with them going, "I think you can do a little better. And so a lot of this is not, the fault of Family Care in Milwaukee County. A lot of this is still the fault of the state, because that's who our contract is with. It's actually, quite an honor for Milwaukee County to be selected to provide family care in Racine and Kenosha, because when we met with the state, not only did they like the fact that Ms. Ledger's not making a six-figure salary, but they also liked the fact that we had done this program efficiently and we're doing it well. We got awarded this contract. We competed. We filled up an RFP. We asked to be at the table, and we were selected. And so I think that, yes, now absolutely we need to ask questions and make sure that all the I's are, dotted and T's are crossed, but this is actually a great opportunity for Milwaukee County. And this, for me, is one of those opportunities that I look for as a county supervisor. What is it that Milwaukee County does well that we can take out and expand, you know, statewide and earn revenue from? And hopefully this will be revenue generating. Our family care program does earn revenue, which is the reason why we're interested in expanding to Kenosha. So I know it's you know, it's a new process, but we're also being updated on a regular basis at the CMO governing board. There's a lot of, you know, kind of eyes on it, and so I think definitely when we have concerns, we need to let them know. But basically, I just wanted to remind everybody that this was an RFP process. This was something that we asked to do and that we have been selected to do, and now we're in the, you know, final stages of actually implementing this program in Racine and Kenosha, which is exciting and nerve-wracking at the same time. But again, I think I wish we had other opportunities, Midas and whatever else. I wish we would have, you know, taken those opportunities and run with them. But it does seem daunting. But we've been through this before, in fact, within the last 2 years. And so I just want to assure you that this isn't new. And again, Supervisor Lipscomb and Supervisor Harris, Supervisor Mayo, myself, and maybe Supervisor Rice, because he's a transplant. He's been here before. Remember, just, you know, how much time in reporting the implementation of family care takes. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions? We do have a motion for approval. Madam Clerk, will you please call the roll?
West?
Aye.
Rice?
Aye.
Jersey?
Aye.
Lipscomb?
Aye.
Harris?
Aye.
Mr. Chair?
Aye.
6 ayes, 0 noes. The motion is approved.
Item number 2,
from the Director Department of Family Care, requesting authorization to revise and extend the professional services contract with Superior Support Resources, Inc. for a period of 5 years to provide member information, documentation, authorization system, hosting, support, and maintenance services to support access by multiple users.
Supervisor Mayo moves approval. Is there any other comments or questions from the committee?
Madam Chair, may I just provide additional information? Just so that the board is fully aware, the Department of Family Care had a contract, two separate agreements with Superior Support Resources to provide posting applications for that long-winded thing, which turns out to be MIDAS. Member information about that. So there were two separate agreements. What this resolution does is it combines those into one and allows the department through SSR to provide that hosting environment both for the application that the Milwaukee County uses as well as being able to offer that to other entities.
Just a question regarding the term 5 years seems a lengthy contract, particularly in technology matters, which are subject to change. And so if you could comment on that and why it's that 5-year term.
Chairman Mayo. Madam Chair. Supervisor Rice, this is tying to we have two agreements, one with Southwest Family Care Alliance, which is an MCO, a managed care organization, and Northern Bridges, which is another one, will be entering into a 5-year agreement effective May 1st. So what we're trying to do is tie the hosting environment of that system to these contracts. It'll be 5-year contracts.
And Madam Chair, Supervisor Rice, what this is, and I understand your concerns in terms of the length of technology, this is for the hosting of it. This isn't software. This is the location of where you host the software with your server.
So our agreements will be, they'll be in a lease arrangement with our system, but this is the hosting environment for backup and those types of things.
So they're providing the server, the hardware?
Yeah. Paid for by them.
Okay.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Mayo.
Aye.
Rice.
Aye.
Jersey.
Aye.
Lipscomb.
Aye.
Harris.
Aye.
Madam Chair.
Aye.
6 ayes, 0 noes. The motion is approved.
From the Director Department of Family Care, requesting authorization to enter into a hosting and access agreement with Northern Bridges Managed Care Organization to use the Member Information Documentation and Authorization System to support its own care management and claims processing systems and to receive the revenues thereunder.
Madam Chair, move approval.
I have a motion for approval. Any questions?
Just are you satisfied that there are adequate firewalls? And I'm not even sure this is a correct question, but I'll let me start it. Firewalls in terms of personal information with the clients we serve and their use of this. Could you address that?
Absolutely, Madam Chair, Supervisor Jurisic. Yes, all of the, as we enter into, we have an existing agreement with the Southwest Family Care Alliance to provide, they lease MIDAS from us and we host it here. All of those records are maintained separately. There isn't any is spread over from one to the other, which would be the same system configuration for Northern Bridges. We spend a lot of time in the state expects us to, and we do spend a lot of time making sure that member confidentiality is absolutely secure. As a matter of fact, internally within our system, when we refer to a member, our system generates a number of IDs, so we never use individuals' names, but all of those records on those servers are kept distinct from Southwest, Milwaukee County, and then would be separate from Northern Bridges.
Do we keep those records within a separate electronic file? It's not, I'm not a computer person, so please follow up. It's not up in the cloud someplace where they can get a wormhole and delete information. Is that the way we do it?
Those are good questions. Those are very good questions.
Yes, you are, Supervisor Jersey. All of the information is kept very secure. It isn't sort of that virtual environment, but there's backups, there's disaster recovery systems that have to be in place. There's a failover so that in the event something would happen to this particular server, information isn't gone. It's backed up on a regular basis to another server so that we've got extraordinarily high degrees of accuracy and uptime on these servers so that, you know, this is not sort of a 9-to-5 and you can't enter information after that. You know, those servers are where people are able to access the system remotely, which is what makes it very attractive to people from other geographic areas to lease, because you can enter information, you know, anytime that you want from any location because it's web-based. But it is very secure. And we've had a great deal of success with it. We've had a very high degree of satisfaction with the uptime and the security and the maintenance that we've gotten on the servers.
Thank you. So this calls for us to authorize the department to enter into an agreement with Northern Bridges. Mm-hmm. And then our previous action on the prior matter was the authorization to proceed with SSR. So what is the exposure for the county in the event of a breach by Northern Bridges? What happens under this contract if Northern Bridges doesn't make their required payments to the county?
Madam Chair, Supervisor Rice, the contract that we intend to execute with Northern Bridges, again, is the same as what we currently have with Southwest Family Care Alliance, which would be our expectation within any contractual. There's an agreement to make those payments based on enrolled members.
Yeah, it's a per member per month fee.
And so the actions that we are able to take in the event that payments would not be forthcoming would be the same as we would have with any existing contract. All of that has gone through legal counsel. I guess just on a sort of a smaller note, these agreements that we're executing are with sort of our sister managed care organizations. So they've approached us because of their desire to use the system, because Midas is something that was configured specifically for family care, isn't something that's been retrofitted. So we have working relationships with the other MCOs, as you would with any other sort of peer organization. So we have a very high degree of confidence. But should something happen, should they have some sort of unforeseen financial issues, like the termination clauses and all of those recovery systems are there within the contract, which I'd be happy to give you a copy of.
Yeah, I don't necessarily need it. I just want to be assured that if that does happen, I trust that it's unlikely, but if they should fall off the table, that we're not under an obligation to continue to be paying SSR for Northern Bridges related expenses.
Yeah. Manager, Supervisor, and Steps.
Thank you.
Any other comments or questions? I do have a motion for approval by Supervisor Mayo. Madam Clerk, on the motion, please call the roll.
Mayo.
Aye.
Rice.
Aye.
Jersey.
Aye.
Lipscomb.
Aye.
Harris.
Aye.
Madam Chair.
Aye.
6 ayes, 0 noes. The motion is approved. From the Director, Department of Health and Human Services, submitting an informational report regarding a potential base revenue shortfall in the 2012 budget. This item was also goes to the Committee on Finance and Audit, informational only unless otherwise directed by the committee.
Okay. Good morning. Now at the table we have our Director about the services control. And with him is the Director of Delinquency Services for Milwaukee County, Eric Hull. Welcome, gentlemen.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. You'll recall in December we provided you with an informational report indicating that there would be approximately $1 to $2.7 million shortfall. And that was as a result of a phone conversation we had with the state sometime in November. They have since come back to us with an official memo December 29th indicating what we were going to get in revenue, which was a little bit more than what they, per our phone conversation in November. So the shortfall will be less than what we projected in the previous memo in the tune of about $789,000.
But if you have any comments or questions for this report, this is an information item.
Are you developing a plan to address the revenue shortfall?
Yes, you recall in the last memo we mentioned that we've taken some proactive steps in addressing this. For example, we did some fee-for-service contracts. We did a utilization study with our group homes and decided that based on utilization, we would go from 4 to 3. And there was also reduction of some contracts. So we've taken those proactive steps. We've also done the 6 month contracts to give us some flexibility if need be after we review this for a few months, and then we will come back to the board and let you know how things are looking and then provide recommendations on how we might move forward.
Just my only other comment is you certainly cannot rely on the contingency funds for these shortfalls. It's not there. So that certainly should not be any part of our plan on this.
Thank you, Chair. So, I mean, based on the fact that we came in or closer to 800,000, so below what we were projecting a month ago, did the actions we took last month, that is enough to absorb the cut? We would not expect to be making additional pullbacks in those contracts? I mean, we're going to review it after 6 months, but
sure,
based on where we're at, we're expecting we will make adjustments, but not further reductions.
Madam Chair and Supervisor Lipscomb, I'm going to have Eric share some words.
Madam Chair and Supervisors, as the Director mentioned, we made some initial plans in terms of how we executed contracts in December. The actual cut to Milwaukee County ended up being approximately $1.4 million. And so in total state revenue, that potentially would come in the form of youth aids. As you recall, we are constantly, it's sort of a dynamic environment, looking at how many kids are going to state corrections, how long they're staying there, because it is the net effect of that then either increases or decreases the amount of revenue, whether or not we meet our mark in our projection of how much of that total youth age revenue that we're going to receive. So at this point in time, based upon our best estimates and information we have, we're at right around $800,000. That number potentially could change. It could get worse. It could get better based upon our bills from DOC for December, January, and February. So the plan is that come February, we'll have a much better picture as to where things are going to end up for 2012. And then we also have this issue we've got to deal with, that we have a number of contracts that are out there only through June that are 6 months that we've got to deal with. So we've got, you know, a month to 2 months period of time where we have to be looking at those revenue projections and what plans we're going to have to address that moving forward. And so our position is much better than it was. But frankly, I think that has to do more so with our planning and the fact that the state's reductions came in, the lapse came in less than they had originally suggested to us. So
that might be more confused. So,
sorry.
I guess what I'm trying to get at is, you know, I understand where we are relative to where we set the 12 budget and what we were projecting at the time. Thought we were going to get what we're doing. But the action we took last month, was that equal to what we now know the cut to be? I mean, so have we made the adjustments for essentially $800,000? You got $800,000 more
The actions we took last month were positioning us to make any subsequent changes that we may have to make. So, between now and, say, March, the next time we meet, we will have to make some decisions of how do we deal with this, what is right now projected to be approximate $700,000 shortfall in our revenue. So, I just want to be perfectly clear. Those actions did not necessarily wipe out anything. So, we need to be looking at, again, the costs that are going to come in from corrections over the next 2 or 3 months. Looking at our police referrals and any other changes we can make internally to deal with that, and also department-wide, you know, what other resources or changes could be made to deal with that $700,000. Did you want to? Sorry.
Madam Supervisor, that's correct. Mr. Moe indicated that in our prior report, if memory serves, we had indicated that we had hoped to save between about $175,000 and $250,000 based on the changes we made in those contracts for the year. As Mr. Moe indicated, they are six-month contracts, so we have a lot of flexibility in how we save the remainder of the amount. But when we get more information on how many youth and how many our projections that we have every month based on the first 2 months of this year, then we have a better idea of how we need to proceed with those contracts.
Okay. Thank you. Let us go.
Okay, fine. So, you confused, I'm confused. But when you came back, you stated $1.4 million of deficit that we were going.
then I thought you observed $600,000 because it's $789,000. I thought the report that you did last month, I'm trying to observe some of that shortfall. I thought that was $600,000, so 1.4. This on the playing field right now, you absorb, as she came up, you absorb $200,000 right now, so that's picking it up 1.12. Then you have another $400,000, I don't know where it went, but you have $789,000 shortfall. And what you're going to do is look at your 6 month contract. So I'm on the same page. So look at your 6 month contract and absorb $789,000 that we have shortfall now. But where's the $400,000 difference? So I'm going by your numbers. Yeah. So you start at 1.4. You're back to say $200,000. You still got $400,000 in staff flowing out to somewhere.
The $1.4 million number is what Milwaukee County's take is on the lapse from the state.
So
out of all the cuts that went to all the counties, we're having to absorb $1.4 million.
Are those youth aid? Well, that's a different
That's youth aid's money.
Okay, so.
So, then when we compare that to our projections based upon what we believe the state is going to bill us for state corrections, then that $1.4 million is reduced to the $700,000.
So in other words, you are projecting that the 7.89, the 789,000 is what they're actually deficit the state going to charge us, not the other part.
No.
Madam Chair, $789,000 would be the deficit based on the 2012 budget compared to the actual contract we received from the state. So that's what we're anticipating at this point based on the projections we did for the 2012 budget and the dollar amounts that you all included in that budget and the state contract, which will be before you on the next item, that we anticipate a $789,000 deficit overall for you.
So you're going to absorb into the next two contracts. That's how you start to absorb that money.
Well, actually, the next item is the actual state contract, but the $200,000 that we had proposed in savings from the contract last month would then be applied to that $800,000. So theoretically, we're looking at if that materializes as we think it will, we're looking at about a $600,000 deficit for the year.
One more point of clarification. In coming up with a plan of how we deal with the $700,000, is not exclusively just those 6 month contracts. I mean, those are the contracts that we said we need to limit our exposure. We need to have some flexibility there. However, as you recall, the past report mentioned that was one of probably a number of serious actions we could take. So,
but you're not looking. One more thing, consensus on the fund. You say it's because it stays funded, correct? You're not looking to come back. As long as so that's very good. Mention that.
Correct. No.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any other comments, questions? Okay. Thank you. Item number six.
Item number five.
Sorry, item number five.
From the Director Department of Health and Human Services, requesting authorization to enter into a state-county contract for youth, for community youth and family aids for 2012, and to accept $33,260,076 for state corrections, charges, and community-based services.
Madam Chair, I'm looking for approval, and this is where you're going to try to start making up some of your money, correct?
Master, this is the actual contract with the state, which actually produces the deficit.
That's
this is our starting point to figure out how we're going to close that deficit state later.
Okay.
Okay.
So do you have a motion for approval, Supervisor Joseph?
I do have one question. I'm looking at the report and these formulas. Supplemental funding is allocated based on three factors. Counties proportion of the statewide juvenile populations from most recent year. The county's proportion of statewide Part 1 juvenile arrests under the Uniform Crime Reporting System of the Office of Justice. And three, a county's proportion of statewide juveniles placed in a juvenile correction institution. It just strikes me that as our judiciary wants to do diversion problems, and you were before us last time talking about wanting to get to juveniles at the municipal level so we don't even get them in the system, that this formula in a way punishes us for that. And I just want to hear your response on that. I'm not in any way suggesting we should try to increase the number of juveniles that we put into the system because then we get more money. But maybe this is something we need to address with the state. I mean, if we're trying to do creative things to cut costs and so on, to have a funding formula and punish us for that is a concern.
Madam Chair, Supervisors, yeah, it's a good question. I can tell you that it's been talked about either through like Wisconsin County's Health and Human Service Agency, statewide organization, and at various department levels saying, is it time to look at the Youth AIDS funding formula? The short answer is that, yes, in theory, you could be penalized. In effect, I guess that has not happened because they continue to raise the rates at such a rate that it still makes it an incentive not to send youth. The number of kids that go to corrections is just one piece of it. There is a base formula. It also has to do with high-level offenses in the county for the age demographic. But there have been discussions about is it time to change the formula, if you will. Particularly probably in light of, and I've testified to this, that, you know, that was the plan. The plan was to have an allocated, dedicated amount of funding for counties, for juvenile justice, stop sending so many kids to state correctional facilities. And in my professional opinion, these reductions have sort of changed the plan. And now it may be time to sort of revisit that because you're sort of being penalized for doing exactly what we were sort of championed to do.
Can I ask, Madam Chair, that perhaps we get the intergovernmental committee aware of this issue? I really think that's something that perhaps we should look into further.
Okay.
Thank you.
I believe that you have both sat down with Kelly and Roy in regards to this issue. This is an every year issue. To have you sat down with them this year regarding this issue. Kelly Bablich and Roy De La Rosa.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like a theater club thing.
They are. Yeah, in a way, the IGR is looking at this issue now in relevance to the specific lapse that we're talking about.
Right.
Whether or not that'll come up in those discussions. But yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, we've even heard the district attorney come here, maybe not in front of this committee, but others committee, saying that in the adult side, you know, perhaps a model similar to the youth AIDS funding should be put in place. Of course, we're a little bit cautious with that because, you know, giveth and then taketh away is kind of what's been happening here. So, but yeah, like I said, I think even the governor's Juvenile Justice Commission has discussed this issue over the years, but for some reason it hasn't gotten a lot of traction.
Yeah. Just for the record, Supervisor Jones, it would be very hard pressed to find one formula that the state has that actually works for Milwaukee County.
I just think that perhaps there needs to be, I mean, I can understand why they use the formula they do, but then there perhaps should be some incentive payment for those counties that are doing creative things, that are trying to, you know, work with juveniles in a more creative way, et cetera, and you know, we should be rewarded for doing that, not punished.
And we agree, except that the state runs the institutions and lots of stuff that connects to that. So I agree, but thank you. All right. We have no other comments or questions from the committee.
Supervisor Mayo did move approval. So on that approval, item number 5, Madam Clerk, please call the roll.
Mayo.
Aye.
Rice.
Aye.
Jersey.
Aye.
Lipscomb.
Aye.
Harris.
Aye.
Madam Chair.
Aye.
6 ayes, 0 noes. The motion is approved. Item number 6. From the Director Department of Health and Human Services, requesting authorization to apply for and accept grant revenue totaling $92,244 from the Wisconsin Office of Justice Assistance to support programs administered by the Delinquency and Court Services Division.
Supervisor Mayo. All right. I have a motion for approval by Supervisor Mayo. Any comments or questions from the committee? On that motion, Madam Clerk, please call the roll. Mayo.
Aye.
Rice.
Aye.
Jersey.
Aye.
Lipscomb.
Aye.
Harris.
Aye.
Madam Chair.
Aye.
6 ayes, 0 noes. The motion is approved.
Thank you.
We're going to take next item out of order. We're going to go to item number 10, which is the progress and recommendations of the Mental Health Redesign and Implementation Task Force. And I apologize, that was my fault. I was being overly optimistic and asked the members that were going to be doing the presentation here this morning to be here at 10. And I know this time is very valuable. Many of them are not the Washington County employees. Especially Mr. Carl, since you're sitting at the table. So, the committee can please indulge them. We will go on now to item number 10. Madam Clerk, please call it.
From the Director Department of Health and Human Services, submitting an informational report regarding the progress and recommendations of the Mental Health Redesign and Implementation Task Force. Informational only unless otherwise directed by the committee.
All right. Good morning, Ms. Lucy. Lucy at the table is Pete Carlson from Aurora, who is her ever-present co-chair on the Mental Health Redesign Committee. Please
proceed. Pete, just say your title, please.
Thank you. I'm Vice President and Chief Executive Officer for Aurora Behavioral Health Services.
So, we come to you today with a report out from our action teams to remind everyone the Mental Health Redesign and Implementation Task Force was created by this committee and approved by the board in July of 2011. We've come back once to talk about our progress, and today we come back to describe the recommendations that have been made by the task force. We have divided our task force by having action teams. We purposely chose the phrase action teams because, as we know, people were feeling a little bit fatigued with some of the reports and wanted to see some could we go, could we get some action. Each of our action teams were developed by nominations from our redesign task force, and there were some self-nominations as well. The teams were co-chaired to demonstrate our partnership, and a sincere effort was made to make sure that individuals with the lived experience, otherwise could be sometimes called consumers, were involved at all levels, including leadership, and that we had representation from all aspects of the community. The action teams were asked to do a couple of things. They were asked to look at the key areas of the redesign to prioritize and to select recommendations for each of the areas. Five action teams are person-centered care, continuum of care, community linkages, workforce, and quality. As previously reported, we have had some difficulty in making sure that we have enough diversity in our committees and look forward to working with people such as Supervisor Harris to add additional individuals as we have said we would be glad to do. When I first came back to the county in March, there were numerous reports that had been discussed. We looked at the recommendations that came from six of those reports and realized that those reports generated 120 recommendations. Each of those recommendations were categorized and assigned to one of the action teams for review. Some of the recommendations were consistent with each other. Some were a matter of wordsmithing. Some had the same concepts but were slightly different. Still others were in direct conflict. The action teams were asked to review those recommendations. They were asked to say which of them they felt continued to be pertinent, as we recognize that some things have changed. There's a new state administration. Other types of things have occurred. And also they were asked to say what was missing. Thus, the task force was very inclusive of all the work, and that was my goal when we worked with Supervisor West and others to create this task force. Then we can put to rest some of those reports and move forward in a synchronized manner. The action teams have had over 20 meetings since early October, and they've continued to meet. It involved over 90 participants and from over 40 public and private entities. The participants have included service providers, advocates, consumers, administrators, and various other individuals. We timed the committees a little bit, so some of the committees were started earlier, particularly person-centered care, continuum of care, and community linkages. Some of the others, workforce and quality, actually need the work of the first committees in order to move forward. All of the action teams reported out on December 8th at our meeting. What we'd like to do now is to have each of the action team co-chairs give you a brief review of their action team's work and some of their key recommendations. So, and Mr. David Johnson is here. Mr. Johnson is a member of my staff who has been staffing this process. So I'll let you introduce people and things rolling. Sit here.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the board, and members of this committee for your support of this process so far. It's been quick. I've been impressed with how eager people have been to take time out of their RDP days and to contribute their talents to this. When I know there are lots of other things to be doing. I also want to thank Mr. Carlson and Ms. Luce for their leadership of this. It wouldn't be able to project this without them. Especially want to thank the consumers, providers, administrators and advocates who have been a part of this. Like I say, most people have full-time commitments elsewhere, and so to get this way that they have has been really impressive to me. The reports that you have in front of you and what you read here is the culmination of a lot of many hours of consideration and consensus building. As Lucy said, these recommendations were diverse, sometimes conflicting, sometimes supporting each other, but they were all very thoughtful, and a lot of research went into them, so a lot of consideration has gone into prioritizing these for implementation and redesign. One thing that I noticed about this is that the work that these teams did and the reports they put together affirm many of the initiatives and changes that are already underway at BHD and elsewhere, and so it's been encouraging to see things happening while we're doing this work. And I know everyone in these groups is eager to take the next step, and so with that, I want to welcome Peter Huffle, who's the one of the action team co-chairs of the Person Centered Care team. Not everyone was able to make it today, and so I want to thank those who are great.
All right. Thank you. It's my understanding that you've got a larger packet of all this information, so I'm just trying to be short and sweet. My name is Peter Huffle. I'm the Executive Director of NAMI, Greater Milwaukee's National Alliance on Mental Illness, and co-chaired this with Beth Barraza, who's a certified peer specialist. I want to thank all the county staff and for all of you and for all of the people that worked on this. We had a lot of consumers, advocates, county staff, and from Behavioral Health Division, and I think it was a really good group of people that really looked at all of the recommendations and sort of came up with what we thought were our key points. So quickly, I know there's some definitions that I think are attached to our initial work, because some of the language that we use in here we all toss around, like recovery and person-centered and trauma-informed care, and it may be self-explanatory, but we did include some definitions, so we're all on the same page with that. So our first is to incorporate principles of person-centered recovery and trauma-informed care. The importance of that is in policies and procedures, training and services at all levels. So we hope that person-centered recovery and trauma-informed care and a true understanding of that is actually developed in all of our services. in our policies when people have are applying for funding contracts that that's looked for, that they actually have staff that are trained in trauma-informed care and person-centered recovery, to increase training that exists now. Next is independent living and informed choice. You know, independent living, recovery in the least restrictive setting, you know, not only is that sort of a law, well, it is a law, but what's important about this is informed choice is that we've got currently in a lot of parts of our system, we've got, you know, choice one or maybe choice one and two. And I think that, you know, informed choice is actually having more choices. And I think there's a lot of examples that are going on right now that shed light on that. It's like, for instance, now that behavioral health division that, you know, the what used to be the walk-in clinic, now the access clinic, people can actually get there, not a waiting line, but there's actually expanded hours for people, you know, that's a little bit more informed choice, that you don't have to be there at, you know, 6 in the morning. You can actually show up at 10 or 11 and still get service. Consumers welcomed in full collaborative partners, expert in their own lives, you know, as we look at the research, when people actually are aware when they're doing well and they actually are a partner in their treatment, they actually accept their role and responsibility in their treatment and can recover much better that way. Utilize peer expertise more fully. That's the use of certified peer specialists, which is happening at a much larger level now throughout our system, which is great, but we need more of it. Aid consumer we can use peer specialists to, you know, aid consumers in navigating between levels, access point, increase participation and satisfaction. Community-wide education, this is something that was sort of touched on in all of the reports that we were given and recommendations, but we realized as an action team that as a community and as a county, we need to do this much better level of increasing this, because we find, you know, children, schools, daycare providers, foster care, is there enough education to detect, you know, early signs of mental health issues? Is it that we have a system where, you know, people are coming in when they're already in crisis? And I know some of the reports have shown that, but I think we do just need to really realize that there needs to be a much better, you know, outreach, education, normalization of seeking mental health services at all of our levels of care in our system. You know, this will, of course, reduce stigma and promote recovery in our community. You know, all too often at our office, we get people that, you know, they come in when there's already a crisis. You know, their parents call and their child's 18 or 19 and then they have their first break and there was early warning signs. You know, they were kicked out of school. They were having trouble in some of their after-school programs, but there was nobody actually making sure that, you know, this child felt comfortable reaching out for services. Expand application of comprehensive continuous integrated systems of care. Easy to say. That's the CCISC that has been brought here by Drs. Minkoff and Klein. And I'm not sure how many agencies are involved, but it's talking about the focuses is actually getting us all as providers to be able to handle people that have co-occurring both mental illness and AODA and other disabilities as well. Too often times people are siloed and told they have to go over here or over there because they've got one or another co-occurring issue at the time. It's in Milwaukee, it's called the MC3, which is Comprehensive Community Cadre or something. I don't know the exact term for that. But the importance of that is everybody that's on that is signed on. Now there's been a charter where people have signed on as agencies. They go through an assessment tool of their agency that shows that they're actually able to meet these person-centered and welcoming and competent services to be able to provide, if not the service for somebody, a guided referral so they can actually get the service that they came for instead of just saying this is the wrong door. So that sums up what I've got. Thanks.
Peter's co-chair, Beth Ann Barazin, is a super advocate and a peer specialist at our space. She's not able to join us today because she's actually working with Dr. Minkoff on the Milwaukee Co-Occurring Competency Cadre for MC3. So that's where she's at today and doing good work elsewhere. Jeff. Two other co-chairs who are able to join us today are from the Continuum of Care team, which is I think had some of the more robust discussions of the action teams, and they met several times and could probably talk for another couple of years about the issues. And so to get to where they got and to coalesce around this vision statement they have in front of you and to reach that consensus was an impressive feat, I think. And they'll benefit a lot from the upcoming summit with the Human Services Research Institute, who are coming to join us and offer some technical assistance and advice on moving forward and turning that consensus into concrete action steps for the coming year. The co-chairs of that team were Lee Carroll from Healthcare for Homeless and Mary Neubauer from Community Advocates. They're both elsewhere, and so I'll do what I can, but I can't possibly do justice to the good work that they've done that's fleshed out further in the report in front of you. Basically, what it came down to was the need to expand and sustain community-based services, which is something this group has talked about a lot already, and the county board has shown support for in the funding they've given to the expansion of community-based services in this year's budget. Increasing availability and accessibility for outpatient services, which is happening already through the change of the walking clinic at PHD, apply evidence-based practices, and offer geographically diverse access points, making sure that people are served in their community instead of having to travel far. Moving on from there, responsible downsizing and discharge. The team talked a lot about recommendations to discharge inpatient care, which is a priority, but it has to be done responsibly. It has to be done in such a way that people are going to remain stable in their communities and are going to have the services they need and the support they need to stay in their communities. With that, it's also adequate community services and supports for both mental illness and developmental disability, as well as dual diagnoses, planning and follow-up for inpatient discharges into the community. Collaboration among stakeholders to reduce unnecessary admissions and facilitate timely discharge if people are ready to move on from inpatient care. There's a lot of overlap between the continuum of care topics and the community linkages group, which is coming up next. And so I'm going to defer mostly to Jim Matthew and Christina Finnell, who will be coming up after me, and they'll talk a little bit about the enhancing crisis services to reduce emergency detention. So without further ado, Jim Matthew from the Special Needs Housing Division and Christina Finnell from Mental Health America.
Good morning, Madam Chair, Supervisors. I'm going to start with the beginning of the presentation. I just want to briefly publicly recognize David Johnson for all the work he did. This was a tremendous process and a lot to keep all these groups going and organized, so I just wanted to recognize the work that he did there. So Christine and I did the Community Linkages Committee. So we'll start with our recommendations, and we tried to get as specific as we can to get some concrete goals to move forward. First thing we looked at is expanding crisis resources. Again, one of the goals of community linkages is to try to improve discharge planning and get to folks in a prevention method before they reach mental health complex or private hospitals. So we looked at increasing mobile crisis teams specifically that were community-based to try to improve response times, lead to less inpatient stays. The other thing we talked about, which is kind of a specific goal, and it actually relates to quite a bit of the recommendations we have, is the idea of a community intervention specialist. And what that is it would be a new position that would work with private hospitals, work with the jail, would work with homeless shelters to improve discharge planning much earlier in the process than our system does now. And I think after talking to various shelter providers, private hospitals, it's something that really doesn't exist now. A lot of the homeless shelters don't have the clinical staff to be moving people throughout the system as maybe they should. So this position would be specifically to work with those organizations in the community. We think would make a big difference, especially with the jail, by doing quicker discharge planning. Improving discharge planning, establishing a clearinghouse of current, accurate, accessible information. We feel that we do better discharges if everybody had all the information in one spot, whether it's one agency or two agencies. Everybody seems to have their area of expertise, but everybody in our community is kind of split, and there's no central clearinghouse of information that would lead to better discharge planning. Again, the idea of the intervention specialist can be found in broader recommendations. Next area is to expand supportive housing options. Due to leadership of the county board, we've done quite a few supportive housing units since the housing division was created. We'll be up to about 450 by the end of this year, but we still have tremendous waiting lists for all the developments that we have. So we're continuing to recommend that we work to continue to do more supportive housing under the blended management approach, which is using a very experienced real estate developer with an experienced social service provider and coming together as a team using their separate expertise. So we'd like to continue that. Maximize public dollars to attract gap financing. We've been successful as a county doing that with the previous housing trust fund. So our group is recommending that we continue attempts to try to help developers, help service providers with gap financing as we had in the past. We also discussed the downsizing of CBRF beds and developed a step-down model. Our current CBRF beds are very, very expensive, almost 10 times as much as our supportive housing developments are. Our group feels that there's a lot of consumers that could use housing in between those levels, and we really haven't developed that yet. So in between the permanent supportive housing apartment models we have and CBRFs, we could develop a step down from CBRFs to move folks in a lesser restrictive setting and dramatically increase the amount of housing beds that we did if we downsized even 10% of our current default beds. So I think I'll turn it over to Christina for the rest.
Good morning, Madam Chair and County Supervisors. And I just wanted to add to the housing piece that Jim just touched on is really without that housing piece, we can throw all the funds we want into crisis resources, but unless we have those housing supports once they're out of that crisis resource or crisis spot. Increased use of peer support. We recommend incorporating peer support. There's peer specialists at all levels, and a peer specialist is an individual who is living with a mental illness and has gone through the recovery process. What we're seeing across the country really as far as programs that incorporate peer specialists is really a reduction in service refusals, which we saw was pretty large in the HSRI report, promote better navigation of the system, as well as improve consumer satisfaction. BHC has done a great job of incorporating peer specialists, and that's something that we want to continue to see and really continue to see throughout all of our community providers. Along with that is really the education of the treatment teams. The role of the peer specialist within the care team should be well-defined and understood by all team members. And then lastly, we have a number of community-based peer support programs and models that are working well in the community. We really want to continue to enhance and expand on those services. Next, we recommend increasing community-based services for those with developmental disabilities. Here we need to first focus on the expansion and enhancement of community-based services and supports necessary to facilitate responsible inpatient discharges. And again, here these services should include more than just crisis services. Then we would call for the responsible downsizing of Hilltop. Lastly, our team hopes to see a decrease in the barriers to family care. We recommend establishing a work group consisting of the Family Care Managed Care Organizations, IORIS, and the Aging and Disability Resource Centers. This work group would streamline procedures for timely family care enrollment. We also recommend convening a work group, including the groups that I mentioned above, including DHHS. This group would explore funding options to develop accessible housing for those that are family care eligible.
Thank you both, and next I want to welcome Scott Gelsler from the Fayette Beth Foundation and Leonor Rosas from UMass.
Good morning. It is an honor for me to be here today, and I wanted to let you know that our work group, our action team, did an excellent job of working through all of the reports and identifying the most important things that we would bring for your observation, for your as recommendations. The committee consisted of providers, of community advocates, community people, as well as psychiatrists and psychiatric nurses and people who really cared about the well-being. I think my most area of expertise was my bipolar son, who is my pride and joy. Our recommendations are to build a diverse workforce, beginning with hiring and recruitment, and that this workforce be reflective and sensitive to consumer population. And then one of our members says, whenever you say recruitment, say retention. So we need to maintain quality workforce professionals by providing professional development and retention incentives. And those incentives can be competitive compensation, ability for sabbaticals, exchange positions, different things that will be reflective of what the person needs to be able to continue providing such quality work. And then to improve hiring procedures to align with consumer and provider needs, that this should be more timely. Expand consumer-operated services, engagement of the consumers and the families in the services that are being provided. To utilize peer support throughout the system, expand peer specialists, training and certification programs, ensure consistency and high quality through regular training and evaluation, and to upgrade the compensation to align with the expanded role. We also recommend to partner with higher education. We also recommend partnering with higher educations to improve preparation, to promote behavioral health as a career path early on. Prepare licensed professionals for interdisciplinary teams. Provide clinical experience hours to students. And to update curricula to align with recovery principles, evidence-based practices, things that are working well, and inform educators on workforce supply, demand, and demand trends, and to involve them in the workforce supply and demand. Enhance the ability, training, and use of translators, and interpreters, which are two different skill sets, but to enhance the ability and the training of translators and interpreters. We also recommend to seek to build and maintain cultural competency. And cultural competency does not just happen. It has to be cultivated and worked on and ongoing because our community is ever-changing and ever-evolving. Reinforce person-centered and trauma-informed care in educational preparation and worksite training. Emphasize a culture of ongoing learning. And this is for all professionals and for all providers. It is lifelong learning. Create a standard set of skill requirements to work in behavioral health. Ensure that providers maintain standard skills. Provide or broker cross-training in mental health and disabilities at all levels of care. And to promote community engagement in workforce training and implementation. To cast a broad net of collaboration. To look at all the possible entities that could help us get the work done. And Scott, I ask if you have anything to add.
Good morning. I would just briefly say, building from the last point of promoting community engagement, that this action team took the perspective that we were not speaking about a particular workforce, say, with Milwaukee County. We're actually addressing the workforce that is needed in the community, in private providers, private settings, and at the county, to carry out the sorts of recommendations and redesigns and vision. With respect to the vision and recommendations of partnering with higher education, which the team spends some time on, I'd like to mention that the Fay McBeth Foundation, thanks to a boost from Paula Lucy and a number of other people in this room, has attracted the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation grant to this community to focus on improving the skills of the existing nursing workforce, as well as having an effect on the choosing of mental health as a career for future nurses. So there's a real opportunity for the county, private providers, and private funding. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Paul.
I want to thank everyone who's presented so far. The last team that met and by design, they came together at the last moment, sort of as the quality action team. They came together towards the end because obviously things needed to be decided versus vision needed to be articulated before we can decide how to design the quality measurements for the redesigned system. Karen Avery from Independence First and Henry Knapp from Phoenix Care Systems very capably co-chaired that team through three or four meetings. They were unable to join us today. I'll let that report speak for itself, and that team has a lot of work ahead of it in the coming year, and we'll get some good assistance, I think, from HSRI as well at the upcoming summit.
Thank you all, and thanks for our co-chairs for taking time to come. What I wanted to share with you is a little bit about our next steps. We will be having a Mental Health and Redesign Implementation Task Force Summit on February 14th at Sarah Paul, and we are going to have an expanded version of this report, as well as having a speaker from HSRI to talk about what are some of the national trends and give some reaction to our activities. And we're seeking a national speaker on consumer involvement. So I think that should be a very exciting day. I wanted to say just a couple things and then turn over to my co-chair. First off, I wanted to point out that the 2012 budget initiatives are consistent with these recommendations. We've been working sort of hand-in-hand, leapfrogging along here, and so we do believe that we have resources to achieve many of these recommendations within this year. Secondly, I had the opportunity, thanks to Supervisor Jerzyk, to speak to the Long Range Strategic Planning Committee. And one of the points I wanted to make to them was that the new BHD is not a revolution. It's not going to be one day we wake up and say, here's the new BHD. Instead, it's an evolution. And every day there is a new BHD. And some of you that came, and many of you all of you that supported the new Women's Treatment Unit, that's a great example. That was something we could have a ribbon cutting for. But the things that happen every day in terms of how we're improving our programming, how we're working with staff education, how we're moving towards our accreditation, all of those things are creating the new BHD. And it's hopefully you'll be able to wake up someday and say, it is a new BHD. So thank you for that. Thank you for that, Mr. Krause.
I guess I would just comment that I've been involved in mental health care for going on 25 years now, and I've never been involved in anything in my life that's so much two steps forward, one step back. And I really see this is a huge project, very complicated, with a ton of information. And I would just want to compliment all of the folks that have donated their time to be on part of one of these action teams. There has been so much work that has been sifted through, gone over, sorted out, and just having been involved in various aspects for so long, you can see all of these things that have brought on, they have grown into the problems they are today from 15 to 20 years ago. And it feels like for the first time, we've got a group of people working on this project in a large enough way and have it organized in a way that really does give us the right direction. So I think where we're at today is a tremendous improvement from where we have been at. But I feel like, despite a lot of negativity, there have been a lot of improvements over the last 5 years that we are just continuing to, work on, because this will be a long-term sort of a thing. But in my opinion, we've gotten to a great point, and I didn't know that we would get to this point when we first sat down and started looking at all of the information and where we needed to get to. So my compliments to Paula, to David, to everybody that's donated their time to be on this committee. I feel like we're making tremendous progress, and if we can sustain this, I really truly feel like we can make a difference in the mental health system in Milwaukee County. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to ask Mr. Carlson if he's able to stay for item 12, which talks about past providers in the community. council when we had that discussion here reference different viewpoints on what we think the task is or what we think the response is, and the fact that you're here might be able to provide some a face and a specific kind of response to some of those issues. But there's a survey that we're going over, but it doesn't, you know, I don't know who's responding how on that survey. And I think that in regards to health services, what do you think the state is? State of this is here in Milwaukee County, where you're going as an institution, particularly across the street, what we heard maybe the evolution of science.
Could, Madam Chair, could I speak? I wanted to say, Supervisor Lipscomb, Mr. Carlson had not probably seen item 12, which is the report on our RFI, and so just to give you that background, that he probably hasn't studied that, but I would just say that we've had many evolutionary discussions with Aurora Psych and with Rogers and St. Francis and other providers in the community where, you know, 5 years ago, or actually 7 years ago when I left, we transferred very few individuals to other hospitals. Now, out of the PCS, we transfer about 30% of clients to other places. And so I think, I'll certainly let Mr. Carlson speak, but I think this is another evolutionary kind of approach where we will continue to see that kind of willingness and partnership.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I do see the change in the private sector to, you know, be much more part of what's going on, particularly the emergency detection population. So from my point of view, we're heading in the right direction, and we have been for a period of time now. It's been probably 5-6 years that we've been doing that, and you know, I just feel like all of us in the private side of this have gotten much better at working with this population of patients. I feel like we've gotten much better at, you know, just collaborating with VHD and how we work with the patients and move them around and get them to the place that they need to be. You know, how we work with the emergency departments to move patients from facility to facility. You know, I think the crisis mobile intervention people that have come on board have just been a huge asset. So again, as someone who's kind of lived in this for 25 years, I see where we are today, and I know that we've made tremendous progress. And not that there isn't a ton of work to do, because there is, but we've come a long ways.
Sorry, I didn't mean to get ahead of us on the items, but I just thought that maybe, you know, if you are able to say, just because, you know, my perspective, well, I sort of have a perspective that I've grown into based on what I've heard from other people, because that I'm relying on the expertise of everyone who comes and talks to me on these issues, and to have a provider able to make me listen.
Actually, I've got a board meeting back in the hospital.
Well,
but
maybe it won't work.
I'm happy to talk to you.
All right, appreciate it.
Okay. And just so you're aware, the RFI is the report that will be in front of us. And item number 12 has been discussed at the mental health re-site, and Mr. Carl was there, and he did give his feedback, and I'm sure that Ms. Lucy will share any of that she deems necessary during that report. So, but he is very aware of the RFI and what was returned to us. Okay, we're going to do Supervisor Harris, Jersey, and Ryan.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. I just want to applaud the individuals that came up and shared some of what they were doing, but I have to say, and I will continue to beat a dead horse until I can't beat it anymore, but I would also like to see, when I say I want to see more diversity, I'm talking about within this work group and task force, and obviously I can't read by the names who's a person of color and who isn't. However, I would have liked to see some of those individuals come forth today and report out to the committee. I, as you are aware, I am having an effort, I'm collaborating with Alverno College on February 4th, doing an African American summit, mental health summit that is a charge from my leadership as the national chairwoman of the NABIO organization, which I won't say what the whole title is, that's an acronym.
And so I'm really excited about it. But I can tell you the list of names that we've come up with for people of color that are clinicians is phenomenal. So I know that there are people out there that would be glad to work on this issue and would be like, you know, would like to be asked to come to the table on this. Another thing that I'm learning as I do this summit and working with Alverno College, obviously I'm working with, you know, scholars and people who've done research and so on and so forth. And one of the things that I'm learning, which I'm not sure if we are aware of, and we could be, and I just could have overlooked it or something of that nature, but this whole community health, mental health, going into the communities and having what we're talking about now, is nothing new. However, it hasn't worked in the past, and I'm just curious how we're going to make it work now. And it seems like we're talking about it as it's a new phenomenon, but it's not. So as we're in these task forces and we're talking about these new initiatives, what are we doing to make sure that we're not, you know, we're trying to reinvent the wheel or whatever I'm trying to say. Anyway, my thoughts are
right.
General. But you get what I'm saying. We're not basically trying to do something new, but we've done it before, but it's just something that we need to make sure it's done better.
I think, Supervisor, first off, I want to thank you for your leadership in having that summit, and members of my staff will be attending, and I'm going to attend myself, and I think that will be an excellent opportunity for us to recruit some members to be on our action teams. We're looking forward to that opportunity, and I would tell you that the executive team spent a lot of time and a lot of discussion trying to improve the diversity. And we asked some people that chose not to participate, and maybe there's some, you know, fatigue of participating in things, because I know there's been meetings and not much action, but we're definitely moving to the second phase in terms of implementation, looking to again address that issue. I don't know, Pete, if you wanted to.
I just want to reiterate too that at this committee meeting, I have asked numerous times to please, if you have the name of people you know, that can help provide that diversity, to please get those names to Mr. Johnson or to Mrs. Johnson, and they're happy to send out the invitation. I actually had the honor of adding Ms. De La Rosa to the Workforce Development Subcommittee, and she signed up to be one of the chairs, because not only is she a woman of color, but she's also the parent of dual diagnosis, a child with dual diagnosis. Well, he's not a child, he's an adult, but he's still our baby. But so, you know, we're definitely, I think that's one of the things that we've been real open about, is the fact that we do need more diversity. So if you have those names of people that you think, or people have expressed interest, then by all means, if you're interested, by all means, please get those names to Ms. Lucy. Because I hate for the subcommittees to get, or the committee to get beat up for that, because there has been a lot of attempts made. And in some cases, we had, you know, consumers of color that were participating that are no longer participating, and we were, you know, kind of trying to figure out what happened there, why that is. So we have really worked at it to have that been 100% successful, but We're still working at it. So please, yeah, get those names, because the work is not done by any means.
And if I could, Supervisor, to your second point, I think, I was actually involved in the first iteration of this kind of redesign. I represented the Doyne Hospital on that activity. You know, I've been here a long time. And I think that we learned some things. I think first off, you know, as you might recall, some people might recall, the mental health hospital used to be a 900-bed hospital. Now down to 100, now down to 250. So things have worked tremendously in terms of moving people into the community. One of the things that didn't work as well as we're hoping it will work this time, and that we feel very great support and commitment from the county board and the county exec, is that the money did not follow the clients. And so we need to be very strong and very consistent about making sure the money, if you save money from downsizing, you've got to move that into community services. And that's been one of the issues in other places where they've attempted to do this, is that the money just gets taken up the savings, yay, without being moved into creating that infrastructure net that keeps that individual in recovery in the community. So that's, I think, one of the key issues. Another issue is that is the development of a significant, of sufficient services, and that's another issue, as you've heard from our groups, that we're very interested in making sure to occur.
Yeah, and it does sound like I really like the peer mentoring, someone
yes.
who is recovering or have recovered from from receiving the services that they needed, which I think would be very helpful. And the housing, that was very promising to me. And if we can make that work, I could see this community-based healthcare working much better for our clients. So I was really pleased to hear that. Thank you.
Supervisor Jensen.
I have two thoughts. First one, Ms. Lucy indicated that she had made a report to strategic planning. And I can tell you the long-range strategic planning committee was very satisfied with the overall report. We didn't get this in depth, and the chairman really wanted to preserve this for health and human needs. I can tell you long-range strategic planning chose to just let health and human needs handle this issue. We basically thanked Ms. Lucy for her report. Rob Hank in particular was very happy with the direction that we are going, and complimented Ms. Lucy on the task force and the kind of work that's been done. So I just want to let the committee know that basically strategic planning is going to no longer move in the direction, even though this was identified as a major source in terms of the structural deficit in our budget. We are going to basically let health and human needs really move this. And that gets me to the next point, which is the structural deficit. And this area was identified as a major area contributing to the structural deficit. And we all understand, we all know that to really address the issue, we needed to develop the resources and have put more money into this budget by $3 million in the last budget. But I get to the question when I'm listening, the continuum of care, informed choices, etc. Those areas can all be addressed perhaps by putting more money into a system. And I continue to get concerned about when do we start looking at the dollars that will be needed to address this, because there is finite resources, particularly within the Milwaukee County budget with regard to property tax dollars. And, you know, Milwaukee County is the only county that has its own standalone mental health hospital. And in order to address this revolving door that was identified, we understand that we need to address the community supports. But what I get very concerned about is as the hospital systems start to build more hospitals outside the county, as they have been doing, that we are going to become the magnet as we expand and improve the resources for this kind of avoidance of using our mental health hospital to house all of these concerns. And I think we're doing a good job and we're heading in the right direction. But I'm very concerned that if we're the only county that has had a mental health hospital and we start to develop all of these community resources, we are also going to be the only county that has the kind of extended resources that the outside communities are going to experience and want. So I'm very concerned about that. I'd like to know how we address that. I'm going to be very concerned about the issue of looking at the RFI, and I won't get into all that. But I'd like to hear the response. Where are we with regard to addressing that structural deficit and the finite resources that we really have available? The one I do think the one opportunity we have with family care is you're right, following, having the money follow the patient. And family care in some way gives us the ability to do that. And if we do it correctly and if we do it smartly, we can build up these resources. But I don't want to build the housing for the entire region because the rest of the counties around us aren't addressing this. And they don't have the mental health facility within their communities that has caused an impetus for Milwaukee County to do this. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
And if I could have, if Ms. Lucy wants to try to address it, I know it's a big picture issue.
Well, I guess I would say a couple of things. One is that it is clear that there is a point in time, which is the point where we're at. The money needs to follow the patient. Long term, I believe that at the very least, the costs will even out and, in fact, perhaps go down somewhat. Because clearly, an inpatient admission is a very expensive proposition. And to any of those that we can prevent, or any of the days in the hospital that we can prevent, is improvement for the patient, it's improvement for the system, and it's cheaper. And so we need to look at that as a very precious resource and decrease that. Secondly, I think you sort of teed up the presentation, which will be item number 7, which is a review of Wraparound. And I think Wraparound is a perfect example of how they have moved their activities into the community, community support programs, and they continue to see decreasing costs and being able to serve people with the same amount of money and blah, blah, blah. And I think, I think from that presentation, we get a very different perspective of how it is possible to achieve this. And I don't know what, I really honestly don't know what to say about the regional issues. I think that every county struggles with the needs of the clients that are in front of them.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I would add my voice to those of my colleagues in thanking the task force for its work and for all of the individuals and entities that have been involved up to this point. I particularly appreciate what I heard at the outset in terms of the structure of these groups and the action team orientation. And I've come, I think, in the process of listening to these reports to a better appreciation of the complexity of the issues involved and appreciate your comments, Ms. Lucy, about the evolutionary process we're involved with. And so my comments shouldn't be interpreted in any way as anything other than perhaps a little bit of impatience and a desire for us to move forward. And that's why in the conclusion I was looking for something a little bit more expansive than the summit concept in terms of what the vision is for the implementation pathway and how we move this forward in terms of policy orientation and facility issues and employee mobilization and those sorts of issues. And so I wonder if you could just expand a little bit on your comments and the report to give us a little better flavor for, where we go, when we might be seeing some, tangible, actionable recommendations for action by the county board.
I would say I perhaps was, in the interest of time, was not expansive enough as it relates to the summit. What we have asked HSRI to do is to come for 3 days and to spend time with each of the action teams in developing that implementation plan and to put together some timetabling for us. And so that would be our next step that will occur from that work in February. And we can come back in March with a report about that, or April, whenever. It's to the chair. So I think I don't know if that answers your question, Supervisor Rice, but that's the next step. And I appreciate that I didn't expand to say that really, the action teams are anxious to move forward to their next steps. They've already begun to talk about how will we make this happen, and the work that we'll be doing with HSRI, who did create some recommendations, will help us to create that implementation plan. And I also would say that again, all of these, many of these recommendations are very consistent with our 2012 budget initiatives. And so things like our discharge planning group, our class, we're in the process of working on that, RSP, and so we have a number of those initiatives are already sort of going along, so it's kind of all blended together.
Fiscal year 12, just a general idea about when this might be coming, and I appreciate again the complexity of it, and that we'll be getting consultant advice on specific timetable, but generally what is anticipated for a final report or some recommendations for action?
I would say it this way, Supervisor Rice, if I might. I think that 2013 budget discussions will be very different than the 2012 budget discussions, and I would say that I'm hopeful that sometime in December of 2012 people will say, this is a very different system than what we had at the beginning of the year. And I think, as I said, I don't think there's a sort of end point, and I don't think there's a beginning point. I think it is really very evolutionary.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Supervisor Mayo.
Thank you. I might have been a little bit out of paying attention. So
sure.
I want to come back to two things that you have good. Actually, three. First, I want to thank everyone for coming in and being here, and because your service to Milwaukee County residents, especially for mental health, is very important to myself and to a number of people. Because I have a couple of family members who they have been served before. Let's go to the community-based service. Even though you say follow the money with the customer, but they also the service have to follow on for that, as you alluded to, wraparound program. We have one community-based service that we have the project right now, 25th and Clark. I think that's 25th and North Avenue, the church combination that we have all the wraparound, the money follow the client, and also they have support service there to have the person integrate back in. Is that one of the product models that they are looking at? Do you know what I'm talking about?
I don't know that particular
I would
program.
The church. It's dealing with a church, a building thing. About 3 years ago, we have some housing funding, so it's going to that program too. So that's one thing that is working within the community right
certainly,
now.
Certainly, learn more about that. Right?
Okay. The other one that I want to know about, how many private and partnerships are we looking at? Because even though we had Doan Hospital, and I did not vote to close Doan Hospital, to make that very clear, because I thought it was very important for the institute here. How can we bring that same concept? And are we looking at Title $19 dollars to fund this? So when we look at the private partnership, are we looking to have them bring some money to the table, or are we just looking at the RFP process, and so everybody try to get a little piece of it? Because that would not mention at all either.
I think that funding of the services is extraordinarily complex, but it is our goal to make sure that everyone is receiving all of their entitlements, and so that we can find as much funding as possible for everyone. We work on that rather consistently. We know that there are clients that are Title 19 clients that we do not get zero reimbursement for in the hospital, but we could get reimbursement for them in community services. So yes, I think the answer to your question is yes. We do believe that we will be able to pull down additional Title 19 funding for some of those services in the community, and if we make good use of those services, it should decrease our expense where there is no funding.
And second of all, you district, this is a presentation. Can you make sure that all 19 individuals, I didn't have that in my packet, and I know that was more detailed than what the information you gave us in the packet.
Yes, sir.
All the supervisors should be able to see that, please.
Certainly. It is a summary of the reports from all the other, but we'll certainly send them.
Right, but it's not the same one.
Yes.
That's in here.
Yes, sir.
And I think that in here, give a highlight.
Yep.
We don't talk about all the other things that you have, but here, give it a little bit more detail.
Yes.
A glance of what we're looking at. What are you trying to do? In front of us.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you. Is there anything else?
Make sure we have the first.
Yes, sir.
All right.
Okay. Field time.
I do have one more card from Barbara Becker.
Not here.
Good morning, Ms. Becker.
Good morning, Supervisor West. Thank you, and thank you, Supervisors. I commend everything that's been shared with you and appreciate your support for that. I was a member of the Executive Committee, and, I think that this has been a great collaborative effort, and, I value your comments about the diversity. I share that wish to have a more diverse group at the table, and we very much value your partnership in working on that, and it isn't for lack of trying. So let's keep talking and see how we can do better. What I wanted to specifically address were some of the comments that Supervisor Jurczyk made about community-based services in other counties, and I just wanted to point out to you that many of the other counties, including counties that are adjacent to Milwaukee County, Waukesha County, Washington County, and Kenosha, among others, have done more in community-based services. And specifically, some of the things that Milwaukee County has not moved ahead with CCS, Combined Community Services, in the 1915I because of our concern about entitlement. Other counties have moved forward with those. So they have been able to leverage federal Medicaid dollars to offer more services in the community. At this point, Secretary Smith is moving forward with looking at another option for bringing in community-based mental health service funding called 1937, another one of these numbers, but that would not be an entitlement. So my hope would be that we'll be able to come back to you with some other opportunities to bring in federal funding, and that people with mental illness in Milwaukee County will not continue to be unable to benefit from these wonderful recovery-oriented community-based systems that bring in federal Medicaid dollars that our surrounding counties have benefited from. So, let's keep talking about that. I think that there will be some opportunities there. And again, I think that's one of the reasons why bringing in a group like HSRI again is so important, because they're folks who really know Medicaid very well, and they've worked with urban areas all over the country that face similar challenges to what we're dealing with here. How do you transition in a planful way from a system that is primarily crisis and inpatient-based to a system that still has those services available but puts a reliance on the community-based services, so you only need to go to the emergency room as an exception rather than that being the only service that's offered. So, I commend the leadership for making the decision to bring them back in. I really think that having that kind of technical expertise to guide us in the process will be very important. And Supervisor Rice, I think we all share your sense that we're eager to move forward and to see change and to see better opportunities for people and, more effective use of our dollars in the community. So thank you all for your support. And, I think, again, that some of those additional Medicaid programs are going to give us some opportunities to bring in more funding for community-based supports.
Chair? Supervisor Mayo, Supervisor Jurczyk.
Ms. Becker, thank you, Madam Chair. Even though that they have that
1915I and CCS.
When they made that entitlement for Waukesha or Ozaukee County, however, they did not advertise that. One of the concerns that we had is a person from Waukesha came from Milwaukee County, that we would have to provide that services. You just informed us about that, so we can actually send some of our patients out there right quick.
And we actually have some clients who've moved to Waukesha County, just so you know, from Milwaukee County, because of some of those services, and also have received housing there. So so there is some back and forth that does go on.
Yes, there is limited housing there, so they have to really look for those housing within those two counties.
Yeah.
And they was fortunate to get into that program. We have a lot of housing here that they would get in the program. Good luck. Because you're a very good advocate. A lot of people didn't know that they even implemented this program so they could get that funding. And that was a concern of mine during the budget process, of people just moving into Walker County and overstraining our system real quick.
Thank you for the feedback. I appreciate it.
Supervisor Joseph.
Yes, I had some of those similar concerns when we were on Finance Committee when all that discussion took place. I appreciate Ms. Becker's perspective. As in your position, you get this bigger picture. And it almost seems like just the opposite of what I was talking about. Perhaps the fact that we ran this mental health hospital has held us back from doing the community services, unlike the surrounding communities who perhaps were more ready to go into the community services. I see you're kind of agreeing with that. And the other the other point you made up on 1937, I'm not familiar with that program. I'm wondering if you could share some information with us. Is 1937 basically an entitlement program?
No, Supervisor Jurczyk. Supervisor Smith liked this program for a couple reasons. First of all, there isn't a requirement for statewideness. And secondly, it's not an entitlement, so you can have waiting lists. Of course, as an advocate, you know, I don't like waiting lists. I don't think waiting lists are a good thing, but I've also seen how Milwaukee County hasn't been able to benefit people with mental illness in our community have been left behind because of our fear of entitlements. So, you know, I do see that it would be advantageous. Well, the point that they're at right now is they need to move forward with getting approval from CMS and doing a state plan amendment. And one of the reasons I think that they are moving forward with this is because they actually got some pushback from CMS, because when they moved forward with 1915I, one of the requirements was that it be statewide. That means, you know, that you'd have a plan for moving to all 72 counties. And, you know, it was looking as though that was not going to happen. And apparently CMS is, you know, holding states to a higher standard than perhaps they've done in the past with other programs. CSP, for example, which we currently have, and I think I've reminded you before, that is a program that is an entitlement. So CMS could come in here and say, you know, you're not serving everyone who's eligible for CSP, but frankly, they haven't done much to monitor that. As an advocate, you know, I'd like to see them do more of that, because I think a lot more people are eligible than are currently being served, and some counties actually have illegal waiting lists, which they're not allowed to have for that program. So that's a little bit of the backstory. So it's still a work in progress, but, you know, absolutely we will be sharing that with you. And I think, you know, BHD has just made an addition to their staff, a new person who has previously worked at the state, who's going to be coming on board in February in the community services area. And it's my expectation, you know, that she'll be a good resource and bring some of that knowledge and some good relationships there as well.
Oh, that's great. So if I'm understanding correctly, the 1937 is somewhat like the 1915 I program.
Correct.
With some of these changes.
Yes. So the service array that was being proposed was similar. So it included supportive employment, psychosocial rehab, peer support, and other related services.
Thank you.
Ms. Becker, you don't have to say the counties, but are the counties that have illegal waiting lists, are they neighboring Milwaukee County?
My understanding is that they are not. I am not aware of that. We serve all of southeastern Wisconsin, so they would be hearing from DRW if that were the case, from our office. But I've heard from my colleagues in other parts of the state that that has been the practice. All right. Thank you all.
Thank you. Is there any other comments or questions on item number 10? Seeing none, I want to thank everybody again who came for item number 10, for all of the committee members, for the Mental Health Redesign Committee, the subcommittee members. When we have our meeting, those rooms have been very, very full. But it's always the same people, so they're very committed. And we're very appreciative of that. I also want to thank, again, David Johnson for all of the work that he's done in keeping us all together and all of our balls in the air. And it's phenomenal. We're very lucky to catch them. So, moving on, item number 7.
From the Acting Director, Department of Health and Human Services, submitting an informational report regarding the Wraparound Milwaukee program operated by the Behavioral Health Division. At our December meeting cycle, this item was laid over, informational only, unless otherwise directed by the committee.
Madam Chair, my pleasure to introduce Bruce Cameron, who's now playing for IT Tech. But Bruce is the director of the Wraparound program. I think this actually works out well to do this in this order, and then it gives sort of a sense of before and after perspective. Wraparound is really the embodiment of the redesign process of the children's mental health system. And as you know, it's become a nationally, in fact, internationally recognized program. And Bruce, yesterday, to just give a review of that program, I think it was one of the programs that we should be particularly proud of. It is sort of the Milwaukee thing that people in, from Australia are more involved and more excited about our program than we are in our own city. And this is really an amazing program that's helped many, many people. And this is indeed, as I said, both a national and international model.
Yep.
Yep. Help evolve technology.
Okay.
I'm sure we'll get it.
Okay.
Be like me, just have it right here.
I change your computers. Madam Chairman, Supervisors, thank you for inviting me to present on Wraparound Milwaukee and having an interest in seeing this model. And I think there are a lot of parallels as we look at the redesign of the adult system, because Wraparound itself was a redesign of the children's mental health system 15 years ago. And I go back a long way to that original design of the Wraparound program. So a few things that I'm going to first talk a little bit about Wraparound. Jennifer's passing out the PowerPoint presentation. I'm going to do at the end about a two-minute excerpt from our video, from the video that was done by PBS on Wraparound Milwaukee, and introduce some guests that are here. But a little bit about Wraparound Milwaukee. It's a publicly, what in the children's area is called a publicly operated system of care. And it provides comprehensive behavioral health services and supports to children and adolescents with serious emotional and mental needs in their families. It was developed in 1995 as part of a redesign of the children's mental health system in Milwaukee. And the impetus was a $15 million federal grant through the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration that you approved and helped us receive 16 years ago now. The impetus for Wraparound Milwaukee, though, really came from an overutilization of institutional care in Milwaukee, particularly around psychiatric hospitalization, which was a huge issue for Medicaid. Residential treatment, which was a huge issue for Milwaukee County, because we were spending so much money on sending kids to residential, was causing deficits in the budget at the end of each year. And juvenile correctional placements, which all were causing budgetary issues. And really, after studies, one by the Planning Council of Milwaukee, really showed that there were very poor outcomes and high recidivism rates for kids that get institutionalized. When they come out, they ended up going back in a relatively short period of time. So a few things about the structure. Wraparound Milwaukee is organized as a special managed care entity. And it's organized under a very unique provision of the Social Security Act. You heard 1959, you heard 1937. This one is, we're going back further here, we're 1915 here. But it's a 1915A provision of the Social Security Act. And it allows you to create a voluntary type of HMO model. So we are considered in Wisconsin as a special managed care entity. And as a type of HMO for a very specific Medicaid-eligible population. And that's youths with serious emotional disturbance who meet that definition, and I'll go through that definition, and within a specific geographical area in Milwaukee County only. There is one additional program like Wraparound Milwaukee, which is Children Come First in Dane County. So there are two of these programs in existence in Wisconsin. There are some in other places in the United States. So if you go to Cuyahoga County, if you go to Cleveland, they're a 1915A. If you go to Utica, New York, Project Oneida's a 1915A. So it's a unique model. There are currently about 900 youth on any given day enrolled in Wraparound Milwaukee. 650 of those are court-ordered. And by that I mean, since we're an alternative to youth going into residential treatment and correctional care, what happens is that the court considers Wraparound Milwaukee as an alternative. So prior to a child who was found delinquent, potentially being sent to, committed to the Department of Corrections, the judge has another avenue. He or she could say, I would like that. I find this child delinquent, but care and treatment services on up to residential treatment to be provided by Wraparound Milwaukee. The same thing happens in child welfare, because those are the two systems that can send kids to institutions with a court order. So one of the things about Wraparound, 650 kids in Wraparound Milwaukee are there because they are on that court order. 250 are in a new program called REACH, which is a voluntary wraparound program. And that is for kids that meet the threshold but have not yet, they're still at home. They're still being cared for by their parent. They may have had contact with child welfare or juvenile justice, but they're not specifically under an order. Yes, we know Wraparound was a 2009 winner of Harvard University's. The Kennedy School of Government is the best innovation in American government. In 2004, it was the President's New Freedom Commission, exemplary program for children's mental health. So we've gotten a lot of very positive things. I think it reflects very positively on Milwaukee County. It reflects very positively on this board that approved the program when we originally started, that Milwaukee County does do very innovative things in this country. Eligibility for wraparound, youth must meet the state eligibility definition, which is a DSM-IV diagnosis, have some type of functional impairment at home, school, or in the community. There's some chronicity to it in that it's a condition likely to persist for a year or more, involvement in two or more child-serving systems, either currently or in the past, and they have to be at immediate risk of institutional care in a residential treatment center, psychiatric hospital, or juvenile correctional facility. So it's the higher level of care. It's for youth that are at imminent risk of institutional placement. The fund of Wraparound Milwaukee is really interesting. It's similar to family care, but it's different in the way in the provision it operates under, and two, it's not just funded by Medicaid. And the importance is it can't just be funded by Medicaid because the care that these children and their families need is not all funded by Medicaid. So Medicaid can pay for therapy, but it can't pay for mentors, tutors, employment programs, foster care, if that's needed. It can't pay for that. So the only way you can really make a model like this work is to really pool all of the dollars. But saying that, one of the things that's been the strength is that Medicaid is the single biggest funder. They're currently putting $20 million in capitated payments into the system. So maybe we had to talk a little bit about youth aids, what the state taketh away in one area, they give it back in terms, because this is $20 million that didn't exist in 1995. This is all money that's really been put into the system. So Medicaid has become a payer for things that they didn't ordinarily pay for right now. So they're paying for services in the wraparound program. In addition, we also are able, because we use a lot of crisis services, our mobile, our MUT team, you're all aware of the mobile urgent team, and all of our crisis one-to-one stabilization services in the community, crisis stabilizers, crisis respite, and other facilities, we get another $7 million in fee-for-service. So there's $27 million that comes through through Medicaid. Then in addition, child welfare contributes about $10 million annually through a case rate into the system, and delinquency court services puts in about $9.8 million, about $8 million through $8 million through a fixed payment, and the rest is through a fee-for-service payment. Before going, one of the interesting things, though, is this money, if we look at the child welfare contribution and the delinquency contribution, we go back to 1995, and we look at the cost of paying that Milwaukee County was paid, because it was paying all of the costs, for 375 children on any given day in residential, it was $18.5 million. So what we've been able to do is, over time, is the county contribution into this program has not gone up since 1995. And what we've been able to do is basically reduce the institutional care, thus using those dollars, redirecting those dollars into community-based care, and infusing Medicaid dollars where the county once had to pick up those costs. So it has made a big difference over the period of time. Again, this system uses we pool money. Wraparound is the single payer for all services, so we pay all of the services for a Colby, including their mental health, substance abuse, supportive services, mentor employment, parent aid, all placement costs, we pay the foster care, group care, residential treatment. So it's a single payer system for all care for a child enrolled for those 900 children. The other thing we've been able to do in this 1915 in this model is but the advantage of pooling funds like we do is we're able to decategorize the funding. And operating it as a special managed care entity, we decategorize those Medicaid dollars because we don't bill them out on a fee-for-service basis for specific Medicaid. So because we can function like an HMO, we have the flexibility of an HMO to cover whatever care and treatment. So the Medicaid doesn't look specifically at what service you're providing. They pay us a capitated rate. It's $2,052 a month per enrollee. We can also take the other dollars in the blended funding pool, put those on top of that, and that causes creates a very sufficient, very flexible funding pool. So by operating in managed care, because managed care entities are not restricted to just paying for things that are traditionally paid fee-for-service. They have more flexibility. And our contract with Medicaid allows the child and family team, the treatment team, to decide what's medically necessary. And that's very powerful. So it doesn't have to have a review by a physician or a further review by the HMO. So the 1915A and the actuarial basis for the capitation rate are reviewed annually by the Department of Health. They must be approved by the Center for Medicaid Services each year, so that does go back. We did well this year with our Medicaid contract. We got a 11% increase in our capitated rate, which was the largest increase. We were very pleased considering the state of Medicaid in Wisconsin to do that. So a philosophy of the approach, I know a lot of you are aware of this, but I think it's important because it's unique. It's strength-based. The model really is really about finding the strengths in kids and families and building on strengths. Because if you're in the mouth, you can't build on a deficit. We tend to be very deficit orientated. We find out what's wrong with kids and families, but you can't build on something that's wrong. You can only take something, you know, something that child is good in. They could have flunked all their courses, but they have an aptitude for computers. They have an aptitude for art. They have an aptitude for music. You use that and you build on that. You find every area of strength, and you make your plan around building on that strength. It's very individualized. So if you have 900 kids, 900 families, you're going to have very individualized. No plans look the same. Family-directed. The families run their own treatment teams. It's a family-directed as often as possible. It's access, voice, and choice by the families to direct their treatment teams. It's community-based whenever possible. We do pay for out-of-home care, but we keep out-of-home care relatively very, very short. That way we can provide more of our services in community-based care because we redirect the funding, and a lot of wraparound luck has been to redirect funding that went into institutional-based care. Hospitalization is taking those hospital dollars, residential treatment dollars, even correctional dollars, and redirecting those dollars to pay for community-based care. And you could buy a lot of community-based care for what it costs for one day, for instance, of residential treatment or hospitalization or correctional care. It's collaborative in that one family, one plan. So even though you cross and you're child welfare, juvenile justice, mental health, every family has one care plan and all the services paid by Wraparound Milwaukee. It's holistic. We treat the child in the context of the family. If it's a mother has a substance abuse issue and that's really what's going to determine whether that child is successful in staying in the community or not, then we will pay and we will care for that issue. Whatever the presenting issue, if it's a finding a place to live, you can't provide therapy if somebody is homeless. So you better make your first item finding them a place to live. So it's a very holistic model and it's unconditional in that we say kids and families don't fail, plans fail. and we go in and redirect those. And since it's a single-payer system, as the judge would say, wraparound is not, failure is not an option, wraparound Milwaukee, because I can't move this, transfer this child, cost shift, it's all paid for by wraparound Milwaukee. So it works in that way. Components of care include care coordination, child and family teams, which is our care coordinators are a key role. They coordinate and facilitate care. Our child and family teams, our family-directed teams, are our planning teams. We have a contract with Families United of Milwaukee, and unfortunately, Margaret Jefferson, who would have been here, is under the weather today. So, but we work with family advocates. There are peer supports. All families have access to an advocate. We have a provider network with a very comprehensive array of services. Supervisor Mayo knows that. And just talking about different providers, there's 200 agency providers. One single IT system links all the providers, which is a very, so everything from your authorization to provide a service to your billing to your progress notes for many of the services, everything's done on one electronic system. And we've spent a lot of time on quality assurance and evaluation in the system. This is just a little hard to read, but some of the services, there's about 70 different services in the benefit plan, but as you can see, it's behavioral clinical services, it's placement services, it's other supportive services, respite service coordination, flex funds, families need clothing, housing, groceries, we can pay for it. So it's whatever that child and family needs, the system is able to provide that because the funding is adequate, because it's pooled, and it's very flexible. So that's what we really tried to do with this system. And if something doesn't exist, we can create it because we don't put our money and all our eggs in one basket, so we don't put all our money in any specific service. So whatever the need is where the money flows because it's all done in a fee-for-service provider network system. So if families want more, you know, independent living apartments, then that's for, you know, then that's where the money will go. It's very free. It shifts just as, you know, it shifts on a day-to-day basis as it's needed. So different way of operating. But outcomes, the average cost of a child in wraparound, it's not inexpensive. It's $3,700 per month. But that's opposed to, you know, $9,000 a month in residential treatment. The state rate for residential is $301 a day right now. Over $8,000 in juvenile correctional care, and over $10,000 for a 6-day stay in a psychiatric hospital. So when you look at the options and you look at, it's much less. And programmatically, the average daily population of Milwaukee County, when we started in 1995, there were 375 children in deep end residential treatment centers on any given day. Today, that's 80. That's what we average in residential, 80 kids. Large drop in commitments from Milwaukee County of youth going to Division of Corrections because we have 400 delinquent kids in wraparound Milwaukee, over 400. We have a focus program. We have other alternatives. The judge uses it a lot. I think a large reason why the deficit in youth aids of many years ago became a surplus, even though it's less of a surplus, I guess, as we were talking earlier, is the fact that the courts use wraparound a lot. One out of every three kids on supervision right now is in wraparound Milwaukee. So it's used a lot. By keeping the kids in the community, obviously we keep them Medicaid eligible, and we benefit because we pull down the Medicaid dollars, which we would lose if the child was committed to correction. So reduction in psychiatric beds, 250 in 1995 to less than 60 today. One of the biggest was we closed our own facility. So I was administrator of the Child and Adolescent Treatment Center in 1995, so I had the dubious task of closing my own hospital. Because in youth care at that time, there was a really overbedding situation. It wasn't only that we were running a lot of psychiatric beds for kids, there were a lot of private hospitals that were doing that. So, and a lot of the dollars that today go to community-based care were going into hospitalized children. So we did that. So those monies now really go into community-based care. Clinically, it's improvement vis-a-vis the, if we look at the functioning scales, one of them we use is the ACADBAC, but they're the CBCL. When we look at clinical scores of kids, they do better. Recidivism rates, our most recent study, 669 delinquent youth for a period of 15 months showed the rate of reoffending was only 15.2%. Now that is not a high rate, and when we look at 200 high-risk kids, we get almost every juvenile sex offender comes into RAP or Unlucky. They're one half. They go down to about 6.7%. So the recidivism is way below the national average for that, for kids at that risk. Child permanency is high. 80% of the youth, when they're discharged, go back home. They live in their own home, so the child permanency is high. I know time is of the essence here, so this is just an interesting projection. I took this one to 2009, but if you start in 1996, the first year of RAP around Milwaukee, if you go to the right-hand side in the clear block, we spent $18.4 million, Milwaukee County, on kids in residential treatment center, just that service. The cost of care in those days was $4,400. It's gone up. So if you take this and you say there would be a 5% growth potentially of kids going into residential needing that every year and a 5% increase in the cost of that service, which is indeed what's happened, it's exceeded a little bit of 5%. Today, Milwaukee County and child welfare, it's not only Milwaukee County, in 2009, the average cost of care, and it's now it's over 83, it's over 9,000 a month now. In 2009, it was $63.4 million. Now it's over $70 million. So my point being, if we had done nothing 15 years ago and wraparound went away, there's a $70 million just for one specific service that Milwaukee County would have to figure out how to pay for this service for you. And this isn't group care. This isn't correctional care. This is simply residential treatment care, but just showing as need goes up and as the cost of these services have gone up, it's really unbelievable as to how those cost savings and how you can show that over time it has saved a lot of dollars. So just looking forward, three quick things, and then I want to show you just a two-minute video, is we currently have a new grant. The state has a grant, the funding coming to RAP around Milwaukee for 16 and a half to 24-year-olds called Our Healthy Transitions. We are looking at working more on with the medical home model for foster care youth. It's a new Medicaid initiative. It's a 1937, as Barbara Becker. It's another initiative under the state. And I think Paulo has mentioned, or will mention, in the future, we are looking at an adult wraparound model and looking at one of this new CMS, Center for Medicaid Services Innovation Grants. So that's a little quick piece here, and I'm going to play a little bit of the video, and then I can answer some questions. We'll see if all this technology is actually working. There are some other projects that were recognized by Harvard. I'll go through that. Mm-hmm. And take you right to Track Arm 1.
Sending them to the Greenlee family right now, the family that came to us on some really kind of difficult situations. I lost my second oldest son in 2005. He got accidentally shot at the age of 15. Well, Charles was involved in the accidental shooting of his older brother, which left all the family members, all the kids in the house, spread out in different placements. He lived for 4 days. And it kind of went, kind of lost it. Yvonne was homeless at the time, without a job, without any of the kids in custody. And that's when Wraparound came into my life.
A key role in Wraparound Milwaukee.
Jeff Renator is the person that works with the family team over advocates for the family, and we work for the family.
So we want to make sure that we're identifying the supports within the community that can help make that family be self-sustaining.
Kurt brought me in as a Francis Labor Project explorer, and I'm just at work, you know, trying to make sure that he stays in a positive environment.
It's more about you care about kids and families, and you hold to the philosophy and values of Wraparound. So it's good principles for being family-centered, strength-based.
It really can change lives.
So yes, it's going to be all right. Yes.
The full video, I have a copy for everyone if you haven't seen it. It's 25 minutes long. But I did want to, these folks are very real. I'd like you to meet Yvonne Eubanks. Yvonne Greenlee, who's in the film.
Right.
Come on up, Yvonne. And Kurt Maurer, who's the care coordinator who worked with her. Just, you know, extraordinary story. I'd like to recognize her for her story and how well she's an amazing woman.
Thank you for being here.
You're welcome.
All right. Is there anything you want to share?
Oh.
You can take a minute. I feel your chills.
I'm just thankful for Wraparound and all that they've done for me. My child, she's going to be 18 in March. And she's a 3-point student on a roll. She just started taking up CNN, CNA license. She's going to be a CNA. She's going to be CNA. There you go. Thank you. And she just had two of her tests and she passed them. She was going into her clinicals. In March, she's going to be certified. And my youngest, my 10-year-old, Nazareth, he's doing so well in school. For him to be an ADHD child, and he's been picked twice. This is his second go-around being picked in class to go out of town. He's getting ready to go to Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. And the little 7-year-old, she's getting ready to be 8 this Friday. She's just losing her teeth. That's all she's doing. But she's doing very well at school. And my oldest...
She's keeping the teeth very, very good.
Yes. She's just pulling them out. The 13-year-old, he's now 20. He's been... he's graduated. He's very, very productive. He's been with King Center for like 3 years now. And he made me a grandma.
Oh.
This November. So I'm proud of that. But he's a good father. He still looks after his brothers and sisters. And I'm going back to school myself to be in healthcare. To be a provider, and I'm just thankful. I am just truly thankful. I'm thankful for all what the Wraparound has done for me. I mean, I don't think I could have made it without it. So I'm thankful. I'm thankful.
That's great that we're able to have this extra kind of a follow-up sequel to the story, because when we were doing the filming, it was while Yvonne was still meeting on their family. We're still in the process of wraparound, so we're still doing the finishing touches and getting crossing the T's, dot, and the I's. And with the film, was not able to show that. The fact that all of our kids are back home with her. The major task we had at hand in the beginning was to identify wraparound by Atlas Taurus. Mm-hmm. And he was in one location. Other three kids, Mavis over here, Shania's over here, and it was all a matter of getting everybody all back together. And it's been able to apply its wraparound. It's an all-encompassing kind of approach that worked with the whole family. And even though I've had to try to explain what the wraparound process is, dozens and dozens of times over the years, the easiest way to explain it is just to kind of talk about Yvonne's family story. That's, she was behind she's in the driver's seat behind the steering wheel the whole time, not in the back seat like a lot of system approaches deals with families. And it's just a real great example of how the wraparound process can really work. And it's just been a privilege and an honor and a pleasure to be part of that little chapter in our life with our family.
Thank you so much for coming. Thank you for sharing your story.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Are there any other questions regarding
who came up with the name wraparound?
Me, no.
Oh, now I'm going to take credit.
It's brilliant.
We called it that because 15 years ago, that was the new approach, and the philosophy was called the wraparound approach, which was a strength-based, individualized, collaborative, with the whole approach. And we just decided, since the approach was philosophy was wraparound, let's call it wraparound Milwaukee. Because it really, nothing says it better than that, because that's really what you do, is you wrap services around the needs of families.
Well, I think this was a great presentation. I was aware of wraparound, but this was a very good presentation of the whole program. Who knew that perhaps our mental health redesign, we had in-house the model for moving forward on that. So, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Wonderful. Item number 8.
From the Interim Chief Information Officer requesting authorization to execute a professional services contract with the Joxel Group, LLC, for service and support of the community mental health care application for the Department of Health and Human Services Behavioral Health Division. This item was also referred to the Committee on Finance and Audit.
Supervisor
Mayo?
Okay, Supervisor Mayo moves approval. I know that Ms. Cabela has done her role and has tried to talk to everybody individually about this because it is somewhat complex. Are there any comments or questions from committee members? Seeing none.
Mayo.
Aye.
Wright.
Aye.
Jersey.
Aye.
Lipscomb. Pierce.
Aye.
Madam Chair.
Aye.
6 ayes, 0 noes. The motion is approved.
Thank you. Madam Chair, Supervisors, thank you.
Thank you. All right, item number 9.
From the Director Department of Health and Human Services requesting authorization to enter into 2012 purchase of service contracts for targeted case management services for the Behavioral Health Division.
Madam Chairman, I have one question that came to my attention for the staff out there. They are getting their kids in breaks. They have PhD, am I correct?
Relates to targeted case management?
No, just at BHD, the staff out of BHD, they are receiving 60-minute breaks.
Madam Chair, it depends on the location. Sometimes they add that to their lunch hour. But we do know that there are some clients, some individuals that moved from economic support to BHD that are used to a little different work culture. And there that may have come to your attention.
Correct. Are you working with them so they can get adapted to the work culture so they understand?
I hope so, sir.
Okay. Thank you. But I'm looking forward.
Thank you. Any other comments or questions?
Mayo.
Aye.
Rice. Jersey. Lipscomb. Harris. Madam Chair.
Aye.
6 ayes, 0 noes. The motion is approved.
Item number 11.
From the Director Department of Health and Human Services, submitting an informational report regarding the work plan to study the possible transfer of management of inmate mental health and health care services to DHHS. Informational only unless otherwise directed by the committee.
Madam Chair, this is a beginning work plan just to inform you that we are moving forward with this initiative to evaluate the situation. We have well understood through the budget process that physical and mental care of inmates has been a point of discussion for many years as it relates to, and the Christensen consent decree remains in place, which outlines some standards of care for which the Milwaukee County Sheriff is accountable. How those standards are met or by what agent is not defined, and that's where the alternatives could be discussed. During the budget process, Madam Chair and Supervisor DeBrun brought forth a resolution looking at this, and so we are merely sharing with you that this is our intent of how to study this issue and move forward. One thing I would like to point out is that, point out these are our goals, determine what the needs are, review what the current standards are, figure out if there are gaps in those standards, determining our staffing model, looking at resourcing, and defining that management structure. So that if we can sort of start at the beginning, say what are the needs, what are the standards, and what are the gaps, then we can move forward to say, and how best can we deliver that. Also, we want to review what quality programs are in place or what quality programs should be in place. The work group will be consisting of people from the Sheriff's Department, as well as Corporation Counsel, Department Administration, as well as, of course, members from DHHS. We do intend to report back as activities move forward. Our first meeting will be February 6th, but I do want to remind you all that in the budget debate, it was determined that if that could not meet the June deadline, we could come back and ask for more time. This is an ambitious undertaking, and we do want to be very careful and thoughtful about this.
Thank you. Just a quick comment for folks that are involved. The question occurs to me, or perhaps a suggestion, that another party might be some entity that would represent the advocates for the inmates, whether it's the defender's office or somebody else.
Yes,
that might be valuable up front rather than having to throw rocks at.
Yes. Yeah. We're looking for ways to have meaningful involvement.
Well, Supervisor Rice actually went down the same street I was going down, I guess. And interesting to hear the wraparound program for the juveniles because, you've got the mental health issues, you've got the delinquency, you've got the court involvement, et cetera. And, in the real world, we understand that those with mental illness issues often end up in our criminal justice system. The judges are well aware of that. And I'm just hoping, and I don't know how much you've met. Have you been meeting regularly? How far along are you in that?
Madam Chair, we've been involved in, myself and members of my staff have been involved in discussions as a decision, an evidence-based decision-making grant and process, which really looks at 5 or 6 different key points during a intake process in the criminal justice system to say, are there people that should not be going down the criminal justice perspective, should be going down the behavioral health perspective. And as we've been talking about this grant that we're immersed in, it's due Friday, bringing it out, that's another thing that we're very hopeful that if we could create a program for wraparound adults, that we could end up in the same place as wraparound does for youth, where judges would see that as a viable alternative for services. So it's certainly an issue that we're very interested in trying to resolve.
But can you kind of identify for me how many meetings you've had on this?
My staff, particularly Jim Kubitschek, has been involved in that committee right from the very beginning, and I don't know how many meetings. But
all right, I'll stop pressing you on that.
I get that from you. For you, how many?
Is the sheriff's department been cooperating with these meetings? The sheriff has made comments in the public that would suggest he would not be cooperative with such a program, and I'm concerned about that. He believes strongly in the DOTS program, for example, which may be an entirely different model than the one that Wraparound perhaps suggests. And I want to know if cooperation is taking place.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Supervisor Gibson?
Madam Chair, I have a question looking forward to March. We're all kind of final state from that staff to talk about alternatives, internal data model or alternatives to privatization alternatives. Sort of set up as a bunch of avoidance of privatization. So that will be there in the
I think so. We've not ruled out any of those alternatives yet, but I understand that there's not much interest in privatization.
We're going to take item number 14.
From the Director Department of Health and Human Services, requesting authorization to enter into 2012 income maintenance and child care contracts and Marsha P. Cox Center lease agreement with the state of Wisconsin.
I can go over and Claire can jump in if I miss anything. It basically gives us authority to enter into contracts with the Department of Health Services and also children and families for the lease space at the Cox building. And it also allows us to get reimbursement for records management, employee benefits support, IT services, and mail services. You'll notice that in the report, there's a lease revenue that reflects a reduction of $106,000 compared to what was in the 2012 budget. There's two reasons for that. One, the state is no longer leasing the Hunger Task Force space, and they're also asked for a reduced rate in the basement for the Freedom's food pantry space. In addition to that, we did not budget $18,500 for the General Assisted Burial Program and also the IDAP program, which therefore shows a shortfall of about $126,000 than what was budgeted. So we'll be looking very closely at this over the next year and try to address that shortfall within our current operating budget.
Okay.
This is somewhat sensitive is in my understanding and without trying to say too much in an open session, we have a lawsuit pending with District 48 in Milwaukee County regarding some of the employees that were in the income maintenance division. And if I'm understanding this correctly, we're talking about a contract right now with the state to cover some of the issues with regard to renting space in the Cox Center, but I also see in the report that we're also talking about the pension costs and the state reimbursing the county for a contribution, et cetera. And this may also include some of the issues that are involved in that lawsuit. Am I incorrect on that? And is Mr. Grady, maybe you want to come up here and tell me to stop talking? Do we want to enter into a contract during the pendency of these things?
Madam Chair?
Go ahead.
Madam Chair, Supervisors, what I would say to you is they're really two separate issues. The lawsuit that you're referring to has to do with what layoff rights Milwaukee County has to provide to these employees who are now state employees or have resigned or retired. And whether we win or lose that lawsuit does not affect the contract we'll be entering into with the state going forward. This legislation, with respect to the state takeover, requires the state to pay us, to reimburse us, for the continuing pension costs for those employees who stayed in the county pension system. It also requires them to reimburse us as we, for example, they're taking employee contributions from those state employees who remain in the county pension system, and they have to pass those contributions then back to us. So the contract just memorializes their continuing obligation to reimburse us for those fringe benefit costs, for lack of a better word. The layoffs issue in the lawsuit, I think, is a completely separate issue and is not affected by this contract.
Well,
assume
for a moment we're going to lose the lawsuit. Is there anything in this contract that we're going to start looking at with regard to an ability to go back and recoup losses that we may have obtained? I mean, can we reopen this contract? Are there provisions?
I don't know if there's provisions, but I would argue, or I would say to you, that I don't think we would have the right to do that, because if we lose the lawsuit, let's assume we are required to provide those layoff rights, it's just going to take some employees who are either working for the state or who have resigned and give them a placement right, or opportunity, I should say. And then if those people are placed, they may bump someone else out who then will leave county employment, or bump on down the ladder, so to speak. And so in our total employment costs aren't going to change. We're going to maintain the same number of employees. It's just a question of which ones we're going to have. And the answer is a long-winded way of saying, no, I don't think this contract has that clause, and I don't think it needs it.
Quick question, please. I understand from the memo that the reduction was due to the square footage requirements. Is there any provision in the lease that provides for escalators for additional costs, triple densities, pass on additional utility costs and so on to the tenant?
Madam Chair, Supervisor, no, there are no escalators in the lease with regard to utilities.
So we pay those ourselves. If the utility costs dramatically increase, those are borne by the tenant?
If they increase, yes. It was the basis for a set amount. Anything there? Nothing? That's what we call it off.
Mayo?
Aye.
Rice?
Aye.
Jersey?
Aye.
Lipscomb?
Aye.
Harris?
Aye.
Madam Chair?
Aye.
6 ayes, 0 noes. The motion is approved.
Okay. Go to item number 15.
A resolution by Supervisor Lipscomb authorizing and directing the Director of the Department of Health and Human Services to enroll Milwaukee County in the National Association of Counties Modified Prescription Drug Discount Card Plan.
Is that stuff?
Thank you, Madam Chair. It won't solve our budget problems, but at least it keeps costs of dollars. Basically, this is our current NACO drug plan that we have. NACO has made a change in which participating counties can now receive a dollar for each prescription that is filled using the card. I don't have the spreadsheet in front of me. It's about 40,000 prescriptions are attempted to be filled with the card. In the case of where the pharmacy, for whatever reason, is offering a better discount than the card would provide, consumers get that discount. So what we will be paid for is only the cases in which the cards discount supply to that consumer with the best deal. And that's what the fiscal note, about $15,600 in subsequent years. And that's based on our historical, what we've been filling. So, I think the other thing that I learned about our card, which maybe interests us pet owners, is that the card can be used for prescription drugs for your pets. So for our employees and other constituents who may be covered for drugs, you may be valuing the card. And to the extent we promote that in addition to promoting it as for those who do not have prescription drug benefits, we could see an increase in that. So it's just an opportunity for us to get some value for what we've been offering.
Thank you. This has been a program that we have issue, and I know it's been well received by many of the residents that I know have taken advantage of. So my question, the intent of it is to help save the costs of prescriptions. So why would we want to increase the costs, or is this a net increase that's borne by NACO, or where does the dollar come from if not borne by the consumer? Where does it come from?
I do believe, in a sense, it is borne by the consumer, but the where this arose from with NACO was the fact that there are other competing providers that were also offering incentives, and the question was if their plan wasn't to offer that similar incentive, would counties switch? I don't think in our case we got the incentive to switch because we have all these cards already out of circulation. So the question is, should we participate in some way in the opportunity? There's still the savings is still 25% range for most consumers. It's a balance, I guess. It is in the end of the day, it's a balance. How you want to participate?
So, a consumer who's currently got a card, they have to re-enroll.
Yeah.
Okay. So they'd be paying an additional dollar fee to have the prescription filled. That dollar would be rebate that would come back to go up the account.
I would say that not that they would pay an additional fee, but that the difference in the discount would be. Right, a small reduction.
Any other questions? I do have a motion for approval by Supervisor Lipscomb. Madam Clerk, please call the roll.
Mayo.
Yes.
Rice.
No.
Jersey.
Aye.
Lipscomb.
Aye.
Harris.
Aye.
Madam Chair.
Aye.
4 ayes, 1 no. The motion is approved.
Right, back to item number 12.
From the Director of Department of Health and Human Services submitting an informational report regarding the status of their request for information issued to determine community capacity for behavioral health services. Informational only unless otherwise directed by the committee.
Madam Chair, this is the report of RFI that we issued based on a recommendation and resolution from the Facilities Committee. We did issue that RFI in October 3rd, 2011, and we had a month to respond to it. We were seeking information that provided us with both a good inventory of what are the current services and what is the interest and ability to expand services. This is consistent, of course, with our redesign activities, which you've already heard about, and would provide us with some baseline data. As you can see through the data, we did collect some information. In addition to particular services, we had a total of 52 agencies that submitted responses. Here's the table gives you some of them. I just highlight a few things. One, we had 32 agencies that told us they provide services in languages other than English. We have only 8 agencies that of the 52 that responded that are currently using peer specialists. So as you've heard, this is an area of great concern and possible action for us. We also did look at agencies that are part of emerging businesses. So we think that this gave us some very good information. I would tell you that most of the expansion issues came from people that were already providing services in one of our other networks, either in Wraparound or Wiser Choice or some of those other activities, and that they were willing then to expand their services from a patient population, as you've heard, Wraparound, children and adolescents. They're able to expand that to adults. There were a number of, quote, new ideas, but I would tell you most of the new ideas were kind of rehashing or almost sort of a commercial for their agencies. And so I would say that we didn't see anything that was absolutely, wow, this is an idea we had not thought of, but it did give us some very good opportunity to look at agencies. There were a number of new agencies that came to our attention, and this will be absolutely important for us in terms of using these respondents for future RFPs and future needs.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I had, I guess, trouble sort of distilling a lot of value from it because it's all sort of all aggregated data, and we have the sense that the capacity and interest is there in the areas that we want it to be there or are going to be there, and not just that there are agencies willing to expand in areas where they think
I would say yes, and no. Right? The answers are yes and no. It depends on the agency. I would say that there were agencies that offered services that were not services we were currently anticipating using. But the bulk of the services were expansions from things that we have already found to be successful, agencies that we've already found to be successful. And we'll be, I should have said that, we'll be forwarding the information to our continuum of care and our community linkages action teams for them to kind of look and see, are there some things we need to build, or can we use some of these opportunities in terms of the action implementation plans. I would say that we felt that we had good responsiveness from individuals, and it did spur lots of conversations. So, while I can't say that we had very specific concrete data, I think it was a good next step in the evolution, if you will.
So, sort of what happens next? I mean, how do you, at this stage in the process, you're not getting economics from them.
We didn't ask for that.
So, I mean, in terms of sort of how you plan, how you move forward,
Right. So, for instance, as I said, the class program, the Community Linkages and Stabilization Program, which is our discharge management program, are peeing that out shortly, and we'll be able to use the number of individuals from this list as well as individuals that are involved in other activities to target those RFPs out and be able to use their information to give us comfort that they'll be able to fill that need.
From the Director Department of Health and Human Services, submitting an informational report regarding the 2011 professional services contract with Roshan's OmniCare for the Behavioral Health Division. Information only unless otherwise directed by the committee.
Madam Chair, this is a just an information report. We've been others before me and even me have been here to talk about the pharmacy contract in the past. Our contract for 2011, it appears that our final bill from them will exceed our expenditure authority by $650,000. We've been monitoring this throughout the year, and we are feeling the need to make sure that we're exercising good financial stewardship. We have met with the individuals at Roshan's Omnicare, and we've shared with them that we'd like to do an audit to make sure that all the credits came back to us, and there's a lot of complicated back and forth here. Clients that are currently on the county tax levy would then get Title 19, and they have to go back and bill them, and did we get credits for all of those things? Are we getting credits for medications we're not using? There's some very complex ebb and flow here in terms of this funding. So we would like to just notify you that we have instituted that audit, and we will let you know. We are not asking at this time for permission to exceed our expenditure authority until we have completed that audit. We will be asking in finance for a fund transfer so that we will have the money if this is what we owe. And but at this moment, we will not be asking to extend our expenditure authority. This contract has been bid out, as you see on top of page 2, 2004, 2005, and 2008. In all of those years, Roshan's was our only bidder. We intend to build this out again in 2013. Tend to bid this out again, and we're probably working at how we might also consider, is it more reasonable for us to move this back within our, as it being an in-house activity. When the decision was made to outsource, maybe it wasn't the best decision, or maybe it was. We don't know. So we're working with the Cambridge Advisory Group, Department of Audit, and our contract administration to assess our situation.
Chair, what's the logic behind seeking the fund transfer ahead of seeking for expenditures along with the bills at the same time? Necessary.
Let's speak to that. It has to do with its 2000. Let me.
Chairwoman, Supervisors, Maggie Nassaros.
I'm sorry.
I'm the Fiscal and Management Analyst at BHD. So it's a timing issue. We just want to make sure that we have the money available in 2011 so that we could spend it, because those are 2011 expenditures. Whatever the amount is determined to be that we know, we just want to make sure we have the funds available. And we are surplusing in other areas, so it's just a movement of funds. It doesn't impact the bottom line at this point.
I'm sorry. I read it last night.
Does anybody else have any questions? Seeing that, meeting adjourned.
Well, Madam Chair, could I just say one thing? I just wanted to thank the committee for their attention. I know we're way over in time, but I can't tell you how excited and how well received it was from our co-chairs that they would have the opportunity to come here and present personally, and they really appreciate your time and effort, and I think it was a good thank you to them and a good honoring of them for all of the volunteer time they put in place. So I really appreciate your time and effort for doing that.
Thank you.